This week on RSBNB Update, Archaeology, the 28th skill, is here. We covered the tutorial, core gameplay, dig sites, lore, mysteries, XP rates, and rewards, including relics, ancient summoning, and ancient invention. Also, I already have my 120 Archaeology cape. We'll talk about what happened. This is RSBNB Update, episode 771, recorded Thursday, April 2nd, 2020. Digging Archaeology. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. This week's going to be a big, big episode. We got the launch of the new archaeology skill, and, you know, to cover this, we've got some friends here who have been immersed knee-deep in the digging and the pecking of the artifacts with their little mattocks all the way through. Going down the list, we got Earth here. Welcome back.
Hello.
We also got Sirion joining us.
Hey there.
And Tanis is also here, as you are each and every week. Welcome back.
How's it going?
So this is going to be a fun episode. It's going to be very large and very big, and I think it's perhaps going to be one of the biggest and best episodes that we've ever done in terms of content, because it doesn't end after this episode is over. I've been going through in my head of what the next month for RSBNB Update is going to look like, and to me, maybe it might be a bit different, but to me, it looks like we're going to have at least a month worth of archaeology-based content. Maybe more. I don't
what?
Know.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
Stockpiled my loo paper then. Jeez.
Yeah. Did you just say loo paper?
Yeah.
You don't call that toilet
I don't know
paper.
Who loo is, but if he's got paper.
Loo paper is how the British people call toilet paper, you.
Oh.
Seriously?
Yeah, well, we're barbarians. You need
That's
to just
ridiculous.
Spell it out.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
Toilet
right.
is a gross word. We say loo.
All right, fair enough.
You're a gross word.
But anyways, for anybody who wants to follow along as we're doing this episode, full show notes can be found at update.rsbnb.com. You can also follow along in our friends chat, Bits Bytes. Everybody's in there this week as we're playing the new skill. And just a bit of introductions along the way. Earth goes by Lord Earth in-game. Sirion is, of course, Sirion. Tanis is Tanis79, and I am Shane12088. So,
why do you guys all be also difficult? Just
well,
well
Earth
we don't have
any
name like you did.
Yeah,
right. Something. Lack of creativity. Something. I get it.
All right. So just a bit of a brief overview here from 30,000 feet. What we're going to do this episode is we're going to go through the skill itself. We're going to talk about the tutorial, the core loop, then the rewards, and then focus in on some nitpicking stuff as we love to do here on the podcast. Then we're going to talk about each of the dig sites. Then we're going to provide our tips. And somewhere throughout this entire experience, I have a big surprise for everybody, so keep listening. And for those who are watching on video, you will see something. And for those not, I will direct you where to find the big surprise as we move through this. It's a really fun one. But aside from that, we got patch notes, and then a little bit on the player advocacy group, Slay the Slime, listener question, and we'll round it all off with some tech news. So it should be, for all intents and purposes, a very jam-packed RSBNB update. So let's begin with the tutorial, shall we?
Let's get into
it. I love this tutorial for this skill. I have to say that. It was fluid. It provided exactly what you needed to know. And as you move through it, you know, it almost didn't feel like you were doing a tutorial. They made it feel like you were actually engaging in the skill, but you weren't being handheld. It struck that nice balance between too much hand-holding and not enough. And then it just flowed naturally through the entire thing. And that's the sense that I got from this. What did you guys think of the tutorial?
I agree with that. I have very purposefully, although this is how I approach everything with the game, have avoided learning, looking up, you know, as much as I could. Obviously, I'm going to pick some things up, but to the point where I thought this was a joke at first, like this being a skill. But the tutorial really, I mean, I wholly agree. It was a perfect tutorial. I had something insightful to say, and I was trying to stall just then to find it, but
that's quite all right. That's quite all right. And, you know, it takes you through each of the aspects of the skill. And, you know, I think this onboarding that we had with this skill is probably as well due to the second and third and however many passes they took in the refinement period on this.
I mean, the tutorial was almost identical from what we played through at RuneFest.
Oh, it was? Okay.
What we played at RuneFest was basically the tutorial to the point where you become an intern, and then it would level you up to 42 and just send you off to Everlight. They wanted to give you...
You were hyped. I mean, after playing the tutorial and you played that in RuneFest, no wonder it's so hyped.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. Yeah, that was an awesome experience.
Exactly. It was great. It really puts you into the skill. What I think is super important, and this is something that RuneScape has varied success with, is that this skill lets itself be explained in a very short period. Like in a few sentences,
yes,
you can explain the skill to someone, which is not something I can say about
invention.
A lot of... Like invention is much more complex. And that's good. Where at the same time, the skill has a lot of depth, right? Like, there's a lot of different parts. You can really dig into it, no pun intended.
Sorry.
I think it is really... Like, I thought it was really complex, but I thought it's complex in a way that there's just layers on top of layers.
It's not.
On top of layers. But it's so layered, Shane. Like, the core loop is not... But the skill itself,
yes,
dude, it's layered.
Oh yeah,
so much depth.
And this I think. Sorry.
Go ahead.
This I think comes down to an Informer article I did, I think earlier this year, maybe last year, about core game loops and how if you don't build a game that isn't fun to play, like after your first prototype that you spend 2 days on, you should probably throw it away and start over because no matter how much you polish it, it will remain a turd. This skill, it feels to me that there was a lot of prototyping. They came up with this sort of basic loop, the base core loop, and then they started adding all these layers on top. And that's what builds such a good skill.
Can you explain what a core loop is?
Well, the core loop is just the core loop of activities you do to play the game, right? Like, In your average shooting game, it is shoot stuff until it dies, and then move on to the next thing. And then you level
stuff until it dies, and then,
and then you shoot stuff until it dies.
So
you get experience, you get better.
What you're doing 90% of the time.
Yes.
And the other 10% is getting ready to do the core loop again. Yes.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Okay.
And the core loop in archaeology is.
Excavate.
Restore.
And basically, you don't get simpler than that. And you can,
like that. That's
like you can throw in the sifting at the sand bit in there every so often, but that's not a major part.
A core loop it never really just a loop, right? It's much more complex than that, and it's loops on different levels, right?
Yeah.
Like you sort of doing like what you do at a certain dig site, where in just excavating, like within the excavating part of the skill, there's smaller loops that sort of together build like a bigger loop, and that is where this skill really shines. Like they have all these small loops that work really, really well, and they fit in a bigger loop that continuously gives you like something to work towards, which gives you a reward, which gives you something new to do. So it is continuously fresh because you're always working towards the next step in the bigger loop, while doing smaller loops that are really easy to understand.
And that's what I've been telling everybody with the skill that I talked to about it, is that you can get on or off this train wherever you want. You're not locked into a specific linear pattern. You can stay on it, if you want.
And some of that is depending on which rewards you're after, or just what story interests you. There's a freedom in this skill that is...
Like for the first couple days, I was just completing collections, but now I'm focused on XP. Yeah.
Right. I mean, and that's... This is the first time I can say that I feel like I have real choice in what I want to do. I was afraid that I would be locked into certain things here and there, and I haven't felt like that so far. Everything feels like it's part of it. I really like that.
I think this is the most complete update Jagex has ever delivered. At least of this size.
Yeah.
Because I remembered what I was going to say a minute ago. I haven't done any research on this. I came into this knowing nothing about it, basically. And I don't feel lost. I still feel lost with invention. And the reason I think this is the most complete update they've ever delivered, you can train, I don't know, crafting and probably, 200 different ways? But there's, three that you do. There's a set path.
Yeah. This, but also,
I'm not seeing that.
The only reason you are training crafting is probably to hit that next level milestone as well, right?
Correct.
And for archaeology, I have not even cared about the levels, really. I'm just caring about the next little step that I want to unlock and the next little thing I want to engage with. Like earlier today, I got a tome. I'm like, oh my gosh, a tome. So exciting. Just gave me XP in the end. But, you know, it I keep discovering tiny new things, which is why I've been trying to stay away from discussions about everything that's going to come later, because, you know, it's a discovery skill in a way, right? the feeling of going in here and maybe not being lost, but being a bit clueless maybe as to what this skill has to offer and just trying to figure it all out myself and then making my own conclusions, my own decisions and sort of tracing my own path has been what makes me so engaged with this skill, I think.
It's more like a quest than a skill.
Bingo.
Just gonna... and,
but it doesn't feel like that, because if it felt like a quest, that would put me off. Like, I do not want to spend that many many hours into that. Like, I know you clan quest, I know all that, but not everyone is into that. Like, that's one of the things that I have to say. Like, the mysteries, I was afraid were going to feel like quests, but they don't. It feels like you're skilling.
It's natural. You just kind of get coaxed into them. We're kind of getting ahead of ourselves on that.
It's because it's there's so much. Shame.
Yeah, no, and we're gonna go
I want
there.
A bite of this and a bite of that.
Yeah,
I can't.
We're gonna do that. And I just want to say one other thing on the tutorial before we move into the actual mechanics, because we covered the tutorial well and then the core game loop. Two things on this, you know, just covering the, as I said initially, the start from 35,000 feet. This is the most complex, or I shouldn't say most complex, it is the most complete and most packed skill launch since construction.
Almost apples and oranges, though, man.
I mean, it is apples and oranges, but just the amount of items that were in there. Yeah. We haven't had a skill launch with that many items in it since construction.
And yet, it's not confusing.
Exactly.
And also broken.
Yeah, right. I was going to say, and half the player base didn't get killed in one little small bank and lose all their crap. Yeah. Oh, really? Yeah.
That's what they took the extra few months for, right? And I think...
Yeah.
I think nobody can complain about that, seeing what they put out here. Like, it's really, really impressive. And, you know, there's a few usability things where... I'm like, maybe that could have spent more time on that.
Minor niggles.
It's like in the larger picture, it is all in all super impressive, and it's basically putting the rest of the game sort of. Yeah, now going back to other skills will probably feel like a big loss. It has raised the bar. It's not even in the same sort of ballpark. It is super, super impressive what they have done here.
Yeah. And I think at this point we can jump into the little bits aside from this. And, you know, one of the great things that they did with this is that as soon as you complete the tutorial, you're rolled straight into the first dig site, Karid, at level 5 in Al-Karid. And you start digging around there. And I just love the fact that it didn't even feel like the tutorial was over. And here we are. We're at the desert training this skill that feels like the tutorial, but it's definitely the skill.
Dude, I kept thinking that I wasn't done with the tutorial. I kept saying, I'm like, I don't know if I'm done with it. I was like, it seems I'm not, I don't think I'm done with it, guys. But I was like, I think I was level 20 before I figured out I was actually done for reals.
Yeah, and it really flows nicely. But there are still new mechanics that sort of get introduced later into the game, like the research team you get, for example, at the assistant rank at level 40. That was a really poorly sort of experience. I completely missed that that was a thing, that you had to go to the exam center, to the research table to manage them, and there you get like a little tutorial sort of in the interface, which is much less smooth and nice. And you never really get told to go there.
There's like a little pop-up, and that's about it.
Yeah.
Oh, I missed that altogether. I didn't see it.
All right.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, the tutorial doesn't really scale well throughout the entire skill, but, you know, there's continuously new things that you unlock, and like, they never really explain like what material caches are, but it's pretty self-explanatory, and a lot of parts in the skill are pretty self-explanatory, I think, which is good.
Yeah. All right. So another thing we wanted to talk about with this and potentially all the dig sites is player engagement, because, you know, if you don't have that, if the players aren't willing to, you know, poke around and move through the skill, it's going to, you know, die off. And I think I can speak from activity both on the Clan Quest and RSB&B side that this is the busiest we have seen either of those chat channels in a long time. And if you look at the player counts for the game, there is indeed a significant spike for RuneScape this week, which is perfect and excellent. Now,
I mean, the login servers were not handling all the logins, right? People had trouble getting into the game because they just didn't have enough machines to handle all this traffic.
Yeah.
This has created the best sense of community I've felt in 10 years plus.
There you go. There you go.
Though, granted, I think Jagex also, the timing was great for them, at least, with the outbreak.
Yeah.
I think we saw glimpses of this with the last best update, which was Mining and Smithy.
Yep.
You saw glimpses. And
remember
I
told you? I told you. I said they need to harness this, and when they do, they will be so on point.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, it also shows, like I've been saying all week long, if you give them time, if they have good and clear leadership and direction and they have the time, look what they can do. Like, I'm really excited about this update.
And there's one big reason we got this extra time in there. We'll talk about that after. It's Mod Warden, but he actually did have a message for the players on here. I want to talk about what exactly happens when you dig at one of the dig sites, in particular in relation to how your character works with this. I want to start with the time sprites. Tanis, I know you had some issues in finding those.
Yeah.
I mean, I had no problem with them. They're easy to follow along. They're not, you know, whack-a-mole fishing. They're always active on, like, Rockertunities. And I think they're a good thing to follow. I don't understand still how they work, but I think Sirion is able to help with that. Yes, maybe. So,
yeah. So, what I actually really appreciated about this skill is how transparent it is. I think a lot of mechanics in the game, you basically have to open up the wiki to figure out how it works.
Yeah.
That's what Earth just said with Invention, right? Like, really, to effectively train Invention, you have to put the wiki open on a separate screen and just read through what you're actually supposed to do. That's not the case with archaeology.
I've looked up two pages on the wiki. One of them was the list of all of the material caches, and the other was, like, the artifacts. But that was just because... for the artifacts, just because it was easier to read than scrolling through the skill guide and clicking I on each one.
That's interesting, because for material caches, I've actually been using the in-game interfaces, which I agree, they're not the best, but...
You mean the world map, right?
The world map. It took me a while to figure out. You can hover over the excavation, like the archaeology icons, and they work as... the mining icons.
That's easier than what I was doing.
And also, in the skill guide, there's now, you can hover over the eye, or click on the eye for each of the materials, and it will show you exactly where you can mine them.
What?
Or excavate them.
No.
Hang on, take me through this.
I'm looking at the guide in-game.
Yeah, so in the skill guide, and you go to one of the materials,
Everlight
and you click on
self-throw.
And it will actually, you click on the eye, and it will tell you exactly where the excavation sites are for that.
Okay, Dominion Games Stadium or Barrow's Mounds excavation site. Then, as we mentioned, you opened up the world map.
That's what I've been using.
You go to the Barrows, and lo and behold, it's right there.
It's not the best UI, but it is there, and that is one of the first times that is possible, right? Like, the mining did that, but this is... You know, when I was doing my master work, I was looking at the wiki at all the mining spots for all these things, and I haven't needed that, so that's great. But what I noticed as well is they have the buff icon when you are using, like when you're following the time sprite, it actually shows on your buff bar.
Yeah, let's talk about
what your percentage is. What your percentage is on your focus. It's called focus. What your focus is currently. And what the effects are on the focus. So basically, as long as you have more than 0% focus, you just get 10% more archaeology XP. Boom, that's it. Flat rate. If you then keep on following the time sprite around, so as long as you're excavating at one of the sites that the time sprite is active on, you'll gain focus. If you stop doing it, it will slowly take down. But it's actually pretty slow. Like, I've been able to basically go quickly to a bank, drop my stuff, go back, and my focus was still about 50%, basically. So it's fairly slow.
Is there a meter for that, Sirion? Is there like...
So it shows in the buff bar the percentage as a number on the icon.
Okay.
It took me a day to actually notice it was there, but once it was there, I've been using it a lot. And if you hover over it, it will explain exactly the effects. So you get 10% XP boost if you have any focus. If you have more than 40% focus, you get instead of 10%, you get 20% XP boost. And you get 10% extra precision.
So let's talk about what does precision do? Because that's not
mentioned anywhere.
I think it's like penetration for mining.
Yes.
That's the impression I got.
Exactly.
It just makes it so you get stuff faster.
Exactly. And I think getting a better mattock gives you better precision over time.
Yes.
Then when you reach 100%,
I've never seen mine hit 100.
Really? I get it all the time.
So I guess I'm not doing
it right. Someone a little more focus.
Yeah. So when you hit 10%, there's a really clear sound effect, like a little sparkle. You get a one-time sort of critical hit, as with hitting a opportunity. It starts at 2x precision for that hit, but it goes up as you get higher level. And you get a guaranteed material at that point.
Oh, maybe I just wasn't paying attention, because I have noticed it drop from high down to 100.
Because when this happens, yen. It will drop back down to 60%. And basically, that's then your loop. If you are continuously paying attention, go up to 100, get a guaranteed material and a critical hit, go back to 60, and that's basically it. And I think if you're paying, like, sort of continuous playing, you get one of these probably every minute or so.
And you have a nice picture for us illustrating this.
Yes, I have a nice graph. I decided that I could not be outdone by Mott Jack and made my own whiteboard sketch in Google Drawings.
Yeah, so basically what happens, it goes up, drops sharply, and then starts going up again. For those who are listening on audio, those who you have on video, you can see that right there. So I guess I just wasn't paying too much attention to it going down, because I was wondering, okay, this doesn't – I never see the 100% light up.
It should show up in your check bar. You're focused.
Here we are. We're just at 97%. We're doing another live demo here at RSBNB Update. There we go. It just dropped. Okay. So that's what that is. I see.
And it shows in the chat as well that, you were able to hone in on your excavation.
Okay, so that's what that is. Okay, that makes a lot more sense now.
Yeah.
All right, good. Anything else on player engagement in terms of how the sites work?
We didn't talk about, like, it's hard to see. It's hard to see and it's hard to differentiate, because the only way I found it was in your guys' Discord. And I'm like, what's it look like? And the only thing I could figure out that was even close was when your porter goes off and you get that little swirly thing. I'm like, are you guys talking about the slightly bigger bite thing?
Yeah.
It is not super clear. Actually, I guess I was a bit biased here, because this principle of there being a time sprite, I don't think they had actually implemented the bonuses yet when I played this at Runefest, but they had implemented a placeholder effect. I think they had just used, like, the sparkles from opportunities to show that there was a mechanic where you were sort of forced to move around. But I've been trying to AFK this unsuccessfully. It is, unlike Seven Spirits or anything, it is just the sound that these things are moving just falls away in the background of the gorgeous, gorgeous music. Basically I've been trying to, for example, mining. I've done a lot of mining while I was actually doing other things, right? And just going back and forth. Because the time that it takes to the next opportunity is also sort of predictable. So you sort of know when you have to look back and switch around. But for time spirits... I don't know which of the two it is, actually.
Sprite.
I think it's a time sprite, yeah. It's just not clear.
Yeah,
to me. Right. So
I think it has just the right amount of time when it swaps, because it's not so long that I feel that I should just, open Netflix on another monitor and just watch that and then look back every 4.5 minutes for it to change. But it's not so much that I feel like I'm, it's annoying, right?
It's not agility.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's not whack-a-mole exactly. Fishing.
I think the amount that it moves around is exactly right, and the fact that it doesn't...
It feels a bit too random. Like, opportunities, like I said, they're really predictable. Earlier today, I was just at a excavation site for like 5 minutes, right, without the time sprite moving. And sometimes it just jumps around like crazy. So I feel there's a bit too much deviation in that time. But I do agree with Tannis. Like, well, I think the mechanic works, and what I really like is that it doesn't punish you too much for not following it, right? Like, sure, 20% XP is a lot, but also you're not going to get the main XP bubbles from excavation anyway. So it's not even that punishing to just not bother that much. But it is not the easiest to see and to follow.
All right. I want to move on to lore and mysteries, if that's okay, if there's anything else game-breaking around the engagement, around the excavation sites. Now is the time to sound off on that. Yes, no, maybe so. No? Okay,
nope.
Good.
I think we're good.
This is the lore scale. We just have to say that there's just so much lore packed into this thing. And as I mentioned, we're going to be doing separate episodes on the lore of the various dig sites once we level up and get to that point and unlock those. But you said, Tannis, that you were very concerned that this was going to be a skill that was going to be throwing mini-quests at you left, right, and center. But the mysteries that uncover the lore of the archaeology skill are actually something that you just really stumble upon excavating. It's really not that bad, is it? In terms of what you're able to see and get.
No, what's nice is it feels like it. I mean, it really feels like part of the skill. Like you're just unlocking stuff in the skill. There are some things that I'm sure we're going to mention eventually that are a little taxing, but. And those things like feel more like a quest, right? Like there's some puzzle-ish, I guess, components.
Yeah, but, yeah.
For the most part, no. I was so happy for that because I felt like, okay, this is what I was hoping for. Everyone gets the lore that they want. They get the story they want, and you're not giving me eye tests left, right, and center. So I'm happy. Like, you know, I don't.
Yeah,
no one wants to stop skilling to go and do a quest, you know.
But it doesn't feel like it's like that. It sort of comes back to the player engagement. Like what I think, and even like the talk we had about core loops is excavation is just super chill. I have found it super relaxing to just go and excavate. That's you don't really pay that much attention. It's just chilling out. Getting materials, getting artifacts, very much how I experience mining. And you get sort of these short bursts of paying attention, plotting your next steps, solving a mystery, going to the archaeology guild and figuring out stuff there and restoration. That's sort of the, I always want to say high intensity part of the skill where you really have to pay attention.
Yeah.
And then you go back down into the skill and it's this push and pull effect, like it's like going back and forth between the two works perfectly for me because there's this active part of the skill, something you can enjoy and look forward to, but even sort of the grindy bit, the excavating bit, is really designed around just being chill and I think like the size of the soil box and the rate at which you get materials and all that stuff, it's perfect. Like perfectly balanced to create that balance between those two. I've not found the mysteries a interruption.
They're just there. And I want
my skilling, but I've also not found the excavation to be an that much of an interruption to the other side. Like the balance between the two is pretty on point.
Yeah, and I just want to go through the first mystery here just to highlight how they can work because, you know, everybody's going to do this mystery at level 12, so I think it's fine to talk about this one. But when you start off at Crit at the Zarosian dig site, you're given a little artifact, and you have to restore that artifact, and then you use it on the door, and then after you uncover that door, the door opens, and that's the first mystery at the Zarosian dig site, Crit at complete. It's called Breaking the Seal. And that's all there is to that one. There's another one at the Zamorakian dig site where you need to put four artifacts in place to effectively replace the eyes on this door. And, you know, I made a mistake with this one. Earth, you made a mistake this with one. Yep. Tannis, you did too.
Yeah, everyone I know actually has ended up doing is.
Doing what?
At the Infernal Source. Handing in those Dagon medallions or
you
whatever.
You told me like 2 minutes too late.
Oh no, I actually got that. I did not make that mistake.
What a nerd. What a nerd.
No, actually I did not make that mistake.
Other mysteries can be effectively just uncovering the lore books to complete them. And you get those as you're progressing through the skill. I think this is what they were talking about.
No, lore hounds do not boost your drop. That has been debunked by JMods.
Yes.
But I did enjoy seeing all the lore hounds about and wagging their tails. Made me happy. And I'm now having mine out because I realized how awesome it is just to have a dog wagging a tail running behind you.
I got my tiger cub out, but more on that later.
Oh, good. All right. Other ones. Can I talk about the ritual in Infernal Source? That one with the chalk.
We go right ahead.
All right. This is a minor lore spoiler for anybody who's at Infernal Source in terms of uncovering. But this is one of the first. Actually, it's not the first. It's probably the second or third in depth mystery that you need to complete. But effectively, what you do after you get the lore books at Infernal Source in the second area, you need to complete this chalk outline on this ritual site. Then you need to light the chalk, and then light the candles around the chalk, and then based on what is in your lore books, you have to issue a ritualistic chant, and then that opens up the doorway to the depths of what can only be described as hell or the Infernal Source, as it looks like. But we'll have more on what exactly happens down there in our Infernal Source lore talk once more that is uncovered. There's another one in Kirid Et that requires you to use the four ancient elements of smoke, blood, ice, and
shadow
to I was thinking poison because of its effect on the spell, but shadow to open up a door, to open up an area inside of Kirid Et. So these are the kind of things that we're talking about in terms of this. I imagine as the skill progresses, as we get deeper into it, the number that we have to do for these will increase. And I'm just looking at my book right now for the Zamorakian Mysteries Contract Clause. There's lots of different ramblings of a gargoyle, apparently, that I need to find for this.
There's also lots of, like, tiny little mysteries, right? Like, little NPCs and the things, and just small one-off things that give small rewards, like a set of resource materials, or all that stuff, but,
yeah.
And I really...
get as much out of it as you want.
Yeah.
Exactly. If you just want to focus on the gathering side and getting XP, you can do that, no problem. But if you want to explore every nook and cranny...
Some of the mysteries are sort of required to get to the next level.
Yeah, but I meant the auxiliary things in the room.
Oh,
right?
yes.
That's what I meant. Because, there's little XP drops, too, in these dig sites that you can get as well that help.
I love that touch. Has that ever been done before in a skill?
No.
I thought that was really, really cool.
I just got to say two more things on little mysteries before we move on. There's the imp named Mephisto in Infernal Source that reduces the chance of the portals malfunctioning, and then
love the little Easter eggs in there.
Yeah, with rolling the d4 and whatnot,
and the flungeons and what was it? Flungeons and flagons. Yeah. There you go.
And then at Everlight at the amphitheater, there's actually a statue of Mesomedes that you can restore that acts as a prayer altar.
Mm-hmm.
Where is this?
At the Everlight amphitheater.
Oh, I restored a statue at the Yestes? Oh, the living quarters.
Okay.
There's another statue there.
There are several that you can restore.
Yeah, and this is something, and the reason I'm talking about all these things that are just in the environment is because one of the things we talked about last week was the dev blog on object outlining, which if you have object outlining, you'd be seeing all these without needing to mouse over them.
Mm. Including the massive, massive prison in Caridad that kept blocking me hitting excavation sites. That was a bit of an annoying one.
Yeah. There's also the pylon mechanic in Caridad. Lots of fun little things like that.
That was the good moment. I'll tell more about that later, though.
The only thing about the mist, like in the beginning, you are sort of focused on Caridad, right? And you can basically go, like, hang around there and just go through all the stuff until probably to like level 30 or so, and sort of just solve that, and then you really get to a nice sort of end of a chapter. Like there's a big level gap to what comes behind. So like, okay, I'm now going to do Infernal Source stuff, and I spend a whole bunch of level at the Infernal Source until I got to the actual Infernal Source, which is a massive open new area, which again seems to have like a pretty big level gap all of a sudden. So it's like, okay, this is the end of the chapter, and then you go to Everlight and that pattern sort of breaks. I didn't really find that I could get very far in Everlight. Like I solved the first two mysteries, but they don't really open up like a new area or anything.
We're going to be at Everlight for a while because there's the amphitheater dig site at level 51.
Right. But you start unlocking excavation sites back in the Infernal Source, back at Caridad, but only one of them, which doesn't really get you all the way to like the next chapter. And now I'm getting to the point where I'm like, I'm sort of losing focus now. I would actually rather have one dig site sort of progressing at the time. I feel I am actually getting a tiny bit lost that I don't really know what I should focus on next. It feels like I should now just be grinding until I can play the next whole chapter.
Okay, that's exactly the same way I feel, and I'm at level 53.
Oh, all right.
I just hit 50 a couple minutes ago, and I'm running around Everlight looking at what I have now.
Here's kind of a dumb question, but do we know what the guildmaster would say? Because I know you can ask him, like, what site should I be at this point?
Oh, can you?
And he'll give you the most.
Yeah.
I'll go ask him right now.
All right. Thank you for checking that out. And I mean, at this point, I feel like I could do one of three things. I feel like
Should I be excavating?
I feel like first I could be just excavating the amphitheater and building up those artifacts and the materials and grinding those out. I feel like I could be going into the collection logs and completing collections from the past two dig sites and Everlight. Actually, I've completed all I can at Everlight so far based on my level. So just going back to the previous two. Or I feel like I could go relic hunting in terms of completing other collections at previous two dig sites, but we'll talk about those right up next after.
What I'm doing now is I've gone back to Caridad and I'm just getting a whole bunch of low level artifacts because they're much cheaper to restore. Because to get the next rank up, and we'll talk about the different ranks. Will we actually talk about the different ranks?
Yeah.
Not in the notes.
Yeah, we will.
We should talk about them. Anyway, to get to the next rank, you need to restore a certain number of artifacts.
250.
For assistant, it's 25. For the rank above that, which I'm not sure which one it is, it's 250, which ton.
Yeah.
Which is a whole it's a ton, and I don't think you're just going to get there by just doing the high level. So I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to go back, get a whole bunch of low level ones. Restoring them will probably give me a bunch of XP still, and also bring me towards the count. So that's what I'm doing now. Basically trying to hit a level where I can maybe do more again.
All right. Earth, what did he say?
I asked, and they said, if you're happy staying at either Caridad or the Infernal Source sites, by all means, do so. Sure, there are numerous mysteries for you to uncover now, and you can use them to work towards your next qualification. However, I've also now had a request at Everlight, and then seems to just be saying, hey, you're not done with these two. Caridad and what was the other one? Infernal Source. But you could also go here. Because I haven't finished anything. So, like, completely.
All right.
Did that make sense?
Yeah, so basically, it's not effectively guiding you like a Slayer Master would. It's just saying, right, you know, you could go to these two and do that, or you could maybe spend some time at Everlight, which, but based on what we just said, maybe isn't helpful.
I asked the exact same thing to the Guildmaster when I was like level 42, just after unlocking Everlight, and said the exact same thing. So,
okay,
I'm all not right. sure how smart it's going to
so
be.
So that's a bit of a. So if someone gets stuck, then they're going to have a bit of a problem.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on to collections and qualifications in that regard. So the number of collections that you have for this skill is massive, and you know this is something we can we'll talk about just a bit on how these work, and then we'll morph that into qualifications on this. So the way collections work is you get your standard collection log that you would have in, you know, like the Slayer collection log or something to that effect. And it shows you exactly how many of each you have contributed to various sources. But there's one major different thing about this collection log compared to the Slayer collection log, and that's
actually part of the skill.
It's actually part of the skill, and this contains information about how to unlock the relics, which we'll be talking about in the reward section first up. So there are, let's see, 4, 8. There's 10 collectors from the looks of it. I might have miscounted on that list. But each of them has a specific number of artifacts that they're after from all the various different dig sites. So, for example, if we were to take Isora, for example, she has one called Zamorakian 1, Zamorakian 2, Zamorakian 3, and Zamorakian 4. And when you do Zamorakian 1 the first time, you get a piece of Abyssal Thread, which, when you combine with a giant pouch, unlocks the relic for your runecrafting pouch. Is not degrading, but more on that after. So inside Zamorakian 1, and this is just the example I'm using for one of the collections, you bring Isora in the Black Knight's base, a hookah pipe, an opulent wine goblet, a crest of Dagon, the Disorder painting, Imp Mask, Lesser Demon Mask, Greater Demon Mask, Order of Disrobes, and Ritual and a Ritual Dagger, and that completes that collection, and then you'll be given that piece of Abyssal Thread, which we'll talk about later. But if you want to keep completing these collections, you can, and if you complete it a second time, it will reward you Chronotes instead of that thread, at least in this case. I don't know if the secondary rewards are always going to be Chronotes, or if they're going to be something else entirely.
I mean, you always get Chronotes for giving in, any artifact to a collector. It's just not going to be as much. You always get a bonus
for completing a collection.
It's just not going to be as much as giving it to the museum.
Yeah.
I know it's speculation, but those artifacts might mean something once we learn more about the mission. That's all I'm saying.
And
might want to hold on to them.
Exactly.
Till we know.
So what you can do with your fully restored artifacts are you can donate them to one of these collectors, you can donate them to the Varrock Museum for just Chronotes, or you can disassemble them for invention components.
And some of these are actually used by mystery, so I tend to
like the Crest of Dagon, for example.
Yeah, right.
yeah, like that one, basically. No, but like I've used other ones for mysteries as well before. So I tend to go for some redundancy and make sure that I keep them in my bank.
Yeah, and this is the choice we were talking about in the skill. You can either grind it out, you know, collect the artifacts, collect materials, or buy materials if you even wanted to, and just go for straight XP. Or you can make your primary mission about the collections, which is absolutely amazing in terms of choice, I think.
Yeah. Well, did you notice what a difference having a collection log at skill launch made? Like, it added so much.
Could you imagine what
the
skill would be without the collection log?
Confusing.
Yeah.
Like, imagine training, mining, and smithing from level 1 with a collection log.
Oh, man. Yeah. I don't know.
That's the mind blown sound.
And that is, I think, what is lacking quite a lot from the game is that the only milestones and targets that you have in most skills are numbers. And here it actually has, like, the mysteries,
the collections.
I'm first
to 120,
guys. Yeah, and, you know, there are a whole bunch of people out there right now who are not sleeping and care a lot about that number.
Apparently
and,
someone passed
you know,
out on stream.
It's not for me. And if that's what I need to do to have fun, then, you know, by all means, just stay out of my way. Throw billions at it. Go for it. But
talk about selling cows for 80 million, eh?
Oh, yeah.
But, like, that is not how the majority of the players... That race is going to be raced. Like, that's going to be finished. Maybe a week from now, right? It's not going to take that
and
long.
And what are you
going to
have after you're done? I mean, you're going to have... Yeah. Number one is going to have the joy, but...
Yeah, but see, I think that's the thing with the skill, though. Like... I really think that core loop is so good that it doesn't...
It doesn't need it.
That is the concern I'm having. Like, there's a bunch of people right now who are rushing this. Either for the number, for getting the max guild back, for getting to invention or summoning, for getting money. And this skill, I feel, is a... Like, most skills you can experience again.
Yeah.
This one, I feel, you can only really experience to its fullest once. Because it is the discovery skill.
Yeah.
Once you know the answer to everything, it's going to be not quite the same,
That's exactly it. And maybe that's why this is a good potential alternative name for it.
And... All these people, like,
and I just
want to
say,
was...
the top person as of recording right now is level 90. Now, people are going to hate me for this, and I don't care. Maybe Jagex should have knocked 20% off the XP rates.
Oh, you're kidding me, Shane. Do you know how much it cost him to get 20? Are you serious?
Yes,
you know how 100%. Hard someone else has to work to stay up there with him to provide those materials to get that?
100%.
I don't think
it would have made a difference. These people were going to do this no matter what. But I think they're missing out and missing the point of the skill because they will reach their 120 and they might think, okay, I got a number now. Let's make another account and actually play the skill as. I don't think you can get it out of there anymore.
Yeah.
I just don't think that is how this skill
works.
And this
is why I made a conscious decision this week on the show. Rather than having somebody who is, you know, higher level than us, I'm level 53. I think I'm the highest out of all of us here right now. Rather than having someone who's in the 70s or 80s on the podcast, because we could have definitely found someone for that, I thought, let's attack it from this perspective first, because this is the way the skill was meant to be played, and then let's go after the efficiency scape next week.
Yeah.
Well, and we don't really even have an efficiency scape at this point. I mean, people are still unlocking outfits. Like, that's not totally done for most. I mean, there's so much more. I don't think it can be done. And like I said, like, dude, these materials, like, it's taking an army of people that are training this skill to try to provide the stuff for the people that are racing. Like, why would you want to shoot someone and, like, shoot us all in the foot because someone was running faster? Like, good. Have fun.
Because I'm enjoying it and I wouldn't mind if it took 20% longer.
Well, yeah,
I think
no,
the XP
I
rates.
I think it's actually cool. I think it's good.
I think the XP rates work. really, really well, because it hits that exact sort of border between I get the next exciting thing just as I'm about to get bored with the skill every single time.
And that's the design of it.
Knocking off 20%, it becomes a grind again.
Okay. And, you know, and I want to point out that this is the same reason we were argued to back in 2016, 2015, that we needed the elite skill curve for invention was to solve the same problem. But lo and behold, here we are solving that problem with the skill curve from the beginning. So just keep that in mind.
We don't know how this is going to go, like, going to be at, like, level 90, right? We don't. So... I think it's too premature to say they have solved it once and for all, but up to where I am right now, which is like 40,
it feels good.
Something 47, it's fine.
All right.
Oh, you know, that reminds me of something that I want to bring up too, that you can literally, like, you can fund yourself through archaeology. Like, you know how there's always a, like, kind of partner skills, like archaeology actually provides this way. Right, but archaeology kind of has its own ecosystem economically like that. Like,
I'm guessing the materials.
It's integrated in the game, but, like, you can go do material caches to give you enough cash to buy the materials that you need for the next part.
Right.
You can fund yourself. Like, you go through porters. Oh, my God, stuff for porters is so expensive. But you can sell some of your material that keeps you going. Like, it's working pretty well, I think.
Yeah, but you can't, and this is the ingenious part of this skill. You cannot buy this skill entirely.
You cannot
throw money at it. You still have to get the artifacts to restore.
No, and I'll tell you something that they're running into at the higher levels. It's becoming less and less efficient to throw the money at it, and it's more... It's better almost to do your own.
That's beautiful. Materials. Yeah, that's beautiful.
Because the price is just so high once you're up there, because there's nobody, you know, up there. So it's almost better to do it yourself.
It is gorgeous. Like, the skill is not entirely, like, you cannot train the skill, just do the skill, and have exactly enough materials for all your artifacts. You're always going to be a few materials short. You can either augment that by continuing to just do normal excavations, which means you will end up with a surplus of artifacts, which might be fine. You can disassemble them. I think you can disassemble damaged ones as well. Not sure. Or you can go to the material caches and get yourself the materials you need. Or you buy them, and that's sort of the directions you can take.
Yeah,
but you cannot just throw money at it and solve it.
Yeah, and I'm going to actually move something we wanted to talk about later into this, and then we'll get on to the qualifications for this, because one thing that I think was a big concern for people is that, you know, some of the mysteries have items related to them, and one of them was a candle, for example, which is no problem. But one for the Infernal Source requires a shiny cow, and that is actually being patched up on Monday.
Yeah. I was really surprised that that didn't come up in the extended time period when they were all playing through it, because there's no way they all had shiny cows. Like, who has a shiny cow?
Yeah, but they have, like, the Jekyll's potato, so...
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Because I'm upset here going... even if it was a shiny anything else or any shiny animal, that would have been different. But a shiny cow? No one's breeding cows.
Yeah.
Shiny cow for anything.
Okay. So we'll talk about this, then we'll talk about qualifications, and then we'll get on to the player-owned nerds. So now, as mentioned by Modrolli on Twitter, they did have this shiny cow in there, and... the discussion on this was that the alternative solution will be that will be one of each of a non-shiny strawberry, chocolate, and vanilla cow. So you're still going to need a bread cow, okay, but it's not going to be a shiny cow.
Still use the shiny cow.
You can. You can. This gives time for those who have completed this mystery or those who decide to use a shiny cow before the patch to benefit from what it leads to in the interim, i.e. shiny cows selling for 80-plus million GP as it was yesterday. Also for player-owned farm sellers to keep a bit of the demand for shiny and flavored cows alike going into the weekend. And I forgot to do this before I got off yesterday. I knew I was forgetting one thing. I forgot to reconfigure my farm to breed cows. He also says these things should help alleviate that we won't be able to allow people who have already completed this part of the mystery to go with the alternative in exchange for getting a shiny cow back. Unfortunately, there was no good option here that we were happy with. So compromises all around. Everybody can be equally happy and unhappy with me. And he says the compromise seems to be widely accepted.
Well, that's a good compromise, right?
And I, when this no is also, it also seems, this is the way you deal with feedback, right? From players. You engage in a conversation and you come up with something that everybody can be happy with. So,
yeah. All right. Let's move on to qualifications then, because this is something we talked about. You start off as an intern, and then at level 40, you get your next qualification of assistant. Then following that is associate, then professor, then guild master. And these get more and more complicated as you go. So as I mentioned, assistant requires level 40 archaeology, 25 artifacts restored, solve one mystery, complete one unique collection, excavate 25 artifacts, and complete the tutorial, which isn't too bad. You're going to get there on your own by the time you're 40. Now at level 70, you get the associate, providing you've restored 250 artifacts and excavated 250 of them, which you'll get, completed all of the listed achievements and attend the qualification ceremony. Easy once again. Complete 5 unique collections. Send out your research team on field studies for 24 hours and solve 10 mysteries for associates. So I think everybody's going to get there by the time they're 70, I think.
250 restorations?
Okay, maybe not that one.
That is a lot of restorations. Like, I had to actually go and do a whole bunch of restoration to get to hit that 25, because that's not how I had been training.
Fascinating. Okay.
My skill, I had been training it fairly slowly. I had a backlog of artifacts because of that, of course, but, you know, I had to catch up. And I find a lot of people in my clan are currently, you know, in the 60s.
Our clan.
Then maybe at, like, 100 restorations. So I think the restoration count is pretty steep and probably going to be the main gateway for these graduations.
Yeah, all right. And there's a nice ceremony with it, too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that was so lovely. Yeah. I really like that.
That's cool.
I got the intern one on video, which I'll run here, I think. Fun little thing. Or no, I didn't get it on video. But a fun little thing with the monolith, seeing power, and then the archaeology guild rallies all around you. And then you get a nice little certificate at the end that you can take a screenshot of and put it up on the fridge if you want.
Or my goals topic.
Or your goals topic, right. Okay. Let's go through some of the other ones. So Professor is level 90 with 500 restorations, 15 mysteries, 72 hours of field studies, and 10 collections.
But that feels really, like, skewed, right? Because 250 to 500, at that point, is not... That's only twice as much, not 10 times as much.
Yeah.
So it feels like that 250 should maybe be, like, 150, 100?
Sure.
Like, that feels...
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, big jump.
Guildmaster is 99. 1,000 restorations, 20 mysteries, 168 hours in the field, and 25 collections. So it ends at 99. There's not one for 120, which is odd, but okay. I think this is another good way of progression, and just provides, you know, another way to measure your progress through the skill without necessarily focusing exclusively on XP, which is great.
It's better than a bloody farming reputation.
Oh, yeah. All right. Got it. All right. So we talked about the cow issue and XP training. What do we think, you know, just from our noob perspective here of sub-level 60s, what we think the best training methods are for this, because I have an idea, but I want to hear from you guys.
You know, define best.
Yeah, don't take this the wrong way, but I don't care.
Okay.
Like, that's...
Neither do I, and that's why we're doing
this. If that makes sense. Like, and, it's not... That's not something I care about. Like, I'm not doing this to get it over with. I'm doing it to enjoy it.
Yeah, and it was a loaded question, by the way.
But the best training method is...
always are, bud.
Right. I really think, like... The best training method is really kind of like, it's just doing the core. It's just excavating artifacts, getting the materials you need, getting extra materials if you need them, or buying them. Repeat, rinse, repeat.
And whatever's like, the best for your level.
So,
discover.
I actually have some interesting, I actually have some numbers that I took at some point from training.
Really?
So, yeah. Not like XP per hour, but like
just that's fine.
XP ticks. So these numbers were taken when I was level 26, working at the level 25 excavation site at Carrot At, with more than 40% focus continuously. So just that context.
And this is in the sub document, by the way, if anyone wants it after the fact.
Yes. It's about 1 to 2 experience per excavation tick. I'm guessing it's 1 experience plus the 20% I'm getting from the focus. If you find a material, so not soil, only if you find actually a material, you get 13 XP. If you find a discovery, I got 151 XP, which in my case was an artifact, but I think you also get it for other stuff. Restoring that artifact gets 664 XP. And then solving the mystery, which was the prison door, gave me 900 XP. So the mysteries are actually pretty good rewards, but they're of course one time. But you can see the restoring will be the majority of your... like it. Restoring the artifact is 4 times as much experience as discovering it.
Yeah, and that's the core loop that Tannis spoke of.
Exactly.
One other thing I'd like to throw in here is that the daily challenges for archaeology are good, especially with the daily challenge rework that we had in January. I think.
Though they do give reduced rewards during the grace period, if
okay,
I remember
correctly.
Okay, that's
fine. But it's still a nice buff, or boost, rather.
Yeah.
Still a nice boost.
Yeah, and don't forget that, you know, there are a bunch of things you can get. You know, for example, when you go to the Star Lodge, which is the first room for the Infernal Source, make sure you loot all the chests there, because I think I got like 500 XP worth of books just looking into those chests.
And you know what the sad
make
part
sure
is?
Make sure you just explore.
Hmm? That's where you get those Dagon medallion things for restoring the door.
I got one.
I got
I
two.
I think
there.
I got one that was undamaged and one that was damaged. Yeah.
Yeah,
and then the third one you have to find yourself.
Exactly. I gave those away, unfortunately. All right. So as we said, XP rates is going to be whatever's the best for your level, and like Tannis said, work in the core loop. I think we can talk about the player-owned archaeology team, or some people have called them the player-owned nerds. I prefer the player-owned archaeology team. I don't know about you guys.
I've been calling it a research team.
Okay, the research team. And that's good.
Research. Yeah,
that's
good. It's a research team.
So there's general research, and then there's special research. You uncover the special research by exploring at the dig sites, and then when you go back to your team, you can send them off on that in much the same way that you do with ports. Does anybody else feel like the standard research really isn't worth it? Because you have to pay for it with Chronotes, right?
Yeah, I mean, not until... I wasn't going to do those until I got... the upgrades that I wanted.
Yeah. Same. I've done the special ones, but not the the normal ones. I just don't think that's really worth it.
Yeah. And, you know... there's apparently going to be a chance to get rare materials from these as well. One of them gives you 10 pylon batteries, for example, from the Zarosian research, and this is used. You can either use that to power up the pylon in Kered Et, or you can use them to power up one of the shadow artifacts, one of the number shadow artifacts on the wall in Kered Et. But we'll, of course, talk more about that when we talk about the lore of Kered Et at some point in the future here on the podcast. But yeah, I agree. Special ones are definitely the way to go. I don't know. You guys think this is going to become a daily thing for many people the same way ports is?
If they're able to bring back the right materials, like this is a way to supplement the materials that you're,
yeah,
because you don't get quite enough, you know?
Yeah.
It really depends on the Chronotes, right? Like, I think people will want to have, like, Chronotes are tradable, so, you know, you can just buy the Chronotes. I primarily will want the Chronotes to get all the upgrades from the upgrade shop. Definitely the archaeology outfit as well, for
example. Yeah, we didn't mention that. You can upgrade various things at the archaeology center. Like, you can first upgrade if you want the size of your soil box. You can upgrade the size of your material box. And you can buy precision upgrades for your matic. And there's different sets of upgrades that unlock at each qualification as well, and you purchase these from within the store in the Archaeology Guild. So that's a use for Chronotes, the currency that you get when you complete collections. And I think we mentioned that. We must have mentioned that, where those come from. But we'll talk more about those in the rewards section, I think. I don't know. I really don't have much to say on the archaeology team at this point. I think that it's good for special research in terms of being able to bring back these materials and maybe some artifacts, but I personally wouldn't use them for general research at this point, at least. So, all right.
Agreed.
Let's move on to rewards then. This is, of course, what everybody's probably wanting to hear about. And the first thing I want to bring up with these rewards are the relics, because these are something that we heard a bit about at RuneFest, but in no way was the list that we had at RuneFest anywhere the same as what we got with this. So let me just take us through a bit of a brief walkthrough on how this works. So when you complete a collection, like I mentioned, you complete the Zamorakian 1 collection, as I did, for example. You take it to Sora in the Black Knight's base in the Taverly dungeon, and then after that she'll reward you with a piece of abyssal thread. Now that abyssal thread on its own can be combined with a giant pouch in order to create what the exact name of it is, but for all intents and purposes it's a modified giant pouch. Then you bring it to the monolith at the Archaeology Guild, and then you offer it, and then you unlock that relic. And then that relic becomes something that you can choose to activate if you want. And we went through this in the mechanics section a few weeks back. But for all intents and purposes, you start off with 150 base monolith power. I think that increases to, what is it, 300 or 250 at level 40? And at
250.
And at level 90, it increases all the way to 500. And you can have up to 3 relics active at one time, but you only have 500 monolith power to spread between them. And anytime you want to activate one of these relics, you need to sacrifice, or rather give Chronotes for that.
Is it just me that thinks that the lore around the monolith is probably the most interesting lore of the entire skill right now?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. There's a reason. I'll mention that later. But there's a – yeah. The monolith also has a number of interesting relics or relic powers associated with it. And the one I am after at level 81 – archaeology is farm ecology. Your herb and mushroom patches no longer become diseased. I've been waiting for that for so long. That's the main one I'm going after on this list of relics. How about you guys?
I mean, I really like that one. I'm not really sure which ones I'm after. I've gotten the reputation one, which you get for handing the first Zerosian collection over, yeah. Which gives you, I think it's 20% more reputation gain for farming Menaphos and Mass Cap.
10%.
Don't really care about the last one. Oh, 10%. But the first two are quite nice. You know, 10% is not much, but it, you know, it adds up.
It also includes the heart.
Oh, okay, nice. I thought that was a separate one, but no. Great. I'm not really after any of these, personally.
Pouch protector, room crafting pouches never degrade.
I don't use them.
Yeah, now here's something that is really neat. And Earth, you and I were talking about this last night. There's relics for each of the luck rings. So there's one for Ring of Luck, Ring of Wealth, Ring of Fortune, and Luck of the Dwarves.
I'm most excited about.
HSR has been plummeting, which I find confusing.
Yeah, I mean, it's still...
The way you make these relics is by sacrificing the ring that you need for that luck in the first place.
Oh, you know what's also funny? Hazelmere's Signet Ring doubles as the Luck of the Dwarves, so somebody could, in theory, sacrifice a Hazelmere's Signet Ring to make the Luck of the Dwarves relic.
You're gonna destroy the universe there, Chief.
But,
you
like...
To listen to what Eris said. It has to be that exact one.
Oh, really? Damn.
Yeah.
Aw, that's too bad.
Also, if someone is going to quote-unquote sacrifice one of those... They can do it again. If they've already got one.
Yeah, and if it's not Hazelmere's Signet Ring, that's not too bad. The only one that's a bit up there is the Luck of the Dwarves one, but that's not that hard to get, as we see.
But why... Okay, so why is HSR better than Luck of the Dwarves?
It doubles drops.
Has a chance of doubling drops.
It has a chance of doubling drops. So why are people...
It's extremely rare. That's why.
I mean, why are people panic selling them? Because that's still...
When did the RS economy ever make sense?
No, but like, it's still going to be better than the tier 4
luck
thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Relic. Like, I am not even sure why I would activate that relic in the first place, because I could replace it with a more useful relic at the cost of my ring slot, which I don't care about, because I don't know what other ring to wear, so...
The six-stage circuit's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess if you're into PvM. Isn't it the Asylum Surgeon's Ring or something? I don't know.
Yeah,
if you do Broken Home... For the third time?
Hey, you're invited on this show out of courtesy, and you walk in here and have the nerve to mention that.
All right. I'm sensing...
I had no problems with Broken Home.
I'm sensing a sore spot in the time continuum, so let's move on.
That's sore?
Sore spot.
Your rage?
No. Let's talk about some of the other ones on this list here. Sticky fingers, when pickpocketing, you'll automatically attempt to pickpocket again until you get caught.
Ooh, that makes dwarf traders suddenly really interesting, doesn't it?
Yeah. Deathless, when dungeoneering, you never receive a penalty for dying.
I know. Hey, that'll be useful for you, Shane.
That will be useful for fighting Blink. Holy crap.
Useful for...
Yeah. Divine conversion, when converting memories out of Rift, you convert your entire backpack in one go. Heightened senses, increase maximum adrenaline by 10%, as well as Fury of the Small. All basic abilities generate 1% more adrenaline.
I think there's some nice synergies there, but the question is, can you activate them at the same time? Because
No, you're going to have to choose. Those ones are really expensive.
The adrenaline ones are really at the high end and the really expensive ones.
Yeah. Fury of the Small is at 150 monolith power, and Heightened Senses is 350. So that would do you in for all of them. You can have anything else on there. Conservation of energy, when you use an ultimate, you regain 10% adrenaline. That's another 351, that 118 archaeology. We also have the inspire relics, including inspire love, effort, genius, and awe, which gives you an extra 2% in the support, gathering, artisan, and combat skills, respectively. Here's another fun one I want, Slayer Introspection. When you request a new Slayer assignment, you'll have a choice between the minimum and maximum assignment counts.
Oh, that's cool. I like that.
I might get that one when I finally decide that maybe I should get 120 Slayer.
Yeah, I agree. But yeah, those are the ones that jump out to me. Oh, I forget what the name of this one is. Where is it on the list here? It effectively gives you – it's Berserker's Fury. It gives you the same effect as Darok's set effect, except you don't need to be wearing the set. It deals up to 5.5% all damage the lower your current life points are below max. And it doesn't stack with Darok's set effect. So
cool.
Yeah, those are some of those. And, you know, this is going to be a reward area that you're going to be able to add into in the future. I think the next reward we need to talk about is the Tetra Compass, which is going to be effectively the next generation of Crystal Triskelions. You get four pieces of the Tetra Compass. You put it together. You can restore it at level 50, archaeology. And then I don't know what happens next.
Well, you got to do a clue, Shane. It's a scan type.
Oh yeah, right. They showed that off on stream, didn't they? It's exactly like a compass clue, and it provides
a compass clue
a reward, which is apparently called an ancient casket. Which has the ability to reward treasure trail items, including crystal triskelions, elite or master clue scrolls, archaeology supplies and materials. Archaeology artifacts for all the different factions, and maybe some miscellaneous items for summoning, like the binding contract.
And
what am I missing?
The Dragon Mattock.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, is that the other source you can get it from?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
That's why people are after these.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of that, the Dragon Mattock on the other side is awarded from Big Game Hunter.
Oh, now we had a fun discussion about that in Clan Chat about how,
which is where I'm getting it.
They were still salty 18 hours after the fact, Sirion, about that.
Yeah, I saw. People were calling Big Game Hunter dead content. I mean, the dinosaurs are actually supposed to be dead but alive, so I'm not sure how that works.
But
nice dinosaur.
They're actually pretty common drop right now. 1 in 50, I think, was a. I'm not sure if it's been confirmed, but that was what people were saying.
Yeah. Someone said, I forget which JMod it was. They went like 90 odd kills and they didn't get one. And the JMod was like, ooh, that's harsh. So that led me to infer 1 in 50. And I think that's been confirmed at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Which ain't too bad. So,
I mean, I was comparing it to like getting a dragon pickaxe. That's like, what, 1 in how many thousand?
A lot.
That's a lot, like a lot rarer. So I was actually surprised it was that common.
Yeah.
And while there might be scarcity now while everybody's getting them, I think
they'll
the market is going to be half a year, the market's going to be flooded with them.
And everybody's going to need two of them because you're going to obviously want to use one, maybe, or you can use the Orichalcum one at level 60 with smithing. But everybody's going to need two of them because you're going to need one to make the Imkando Matic at level 80, and then one for level 70 to make the Crystal Matic. And then you merge both of those two together to make the Matic of Space and Time. In a similar process to the pickaxe of Earth and Song.
Yeah. It's worth mentioning, too, that the Encando works differently. Like, the way you get that works differently.
I haven't had a chance to look into that. That'll be a job for this weekend, probably.
Go to the Lava Flow Mine for them. That's for sure.
Thank God. Thank God.
What is this? What?
For the Imcandomatic. Have you got your, since you've been back, have you got your Imcando pickaxe to make the pickaxe of earth and song? I mean, you should, given your name.
I'm aware it exists.
All right. When you get that pickaxe of earth and song, I want you to sing a song.
Nope. Damn. Never again.
Never again.
Oh, you will one day. Just got to know to press the right buttons. Anyways, sorry. Back to the Imcandomatic. That's a level 81. Apparently, you need a chunk of Imcando metal, the lump of Imcando metal, and the shard of Imcando metal, and the slice, which sounds vaguely familiar to the way you create the Imcando pickaxe, but it's different from last time. Apparently, these ones are found within the Warforge dig site. And I'm not there yet, so I don't have any information on how that works. So we'll save that for another day, probably next week on the show. I just want to touch briefly on ancient summoning invention, basically mentioning that they're there and a bit of a recap of how they work from past, because most of the information on this was telegraphed to us already and we're not at the level to unlock these, but we do have a full familiar list now for the ancient summoning. They're Slayer creatures. You know, we got a Hellhound, a Waterfian, the Blood Reaver, the Gargoyle, the Abyssal Demon, the Kelgarian Demon, and the Ripper Demon.
I mean, you get the boy slaying these monsters with a contract in your inventory, as well.
Yeah.
You know which one people going crazy over, Shane?
The Ripper Demon?
Nope. No, the Waterfiends.
The Waterfiend, man.
They're going for like 200k. Yeah.
Oh, because it gives a chance at duplicating resources?
Including artifacts.
Well,
hold up. What?
If you have a water fiend out, it has a 5% chance of doubling a resource you're getting from any gathering skill. This includes archaeology and it includes.
That's why everyone has those out.
Yes.
Okay, I have been.
But they are like, I think about that. Earlier this evening they were going for 150k each.
Yeah.
So
they have 68 archaeology to create them and 50 summoning, as well as unlocking ancient summoning. So.
Which is locked behind a mystery at the Infernal Source.
Yes. The Gargoyle grants a 12% mining level boost, invisible.
It's pretty steep.
The Abyssal Demon summoning familiar will automatically teleport to the target and deal damage when it teleports. Scroll effects. The Water Fiend one is also good. Teleports all items stored within a familiar's inventory to your bank. Ripper Demon is also looking good for PVM, according to David, as people were saying that. It might need to be nerfed. So, and, you know, we do have a full intention of talking about all these ancient summoning and ancient invention in a couple weeks' time. I think we're going to go with that 2 weeks from now on the podcast, a full PVM and invention archaeology themed episode. Ancient invention, once again, people are losing their minds over, you know, all the different perks that you can get. The new components come from dissembling artifacts. And, you know, the perk calculator on the wiki has been updated. You have 9 gizmo slots to work with instead of 5. And with that, I don't know. I haven't really heard much of the devices. One I'm most looking forward to getting is the ancient screener. Or, sorry, the automatic screener.
Isn't that the only device they introduced?
I think so. So. But
I don't find screening that much of a problem, though. I guess it's gonna get a lot slower once you get 100 soil in your soil box.
Yeah.
I haven't found much of a reason to do it. Like, I might do it once in a while if I'm just kind of. But
oh, I've
with
been
an
doing
automatic
it every
screener,
time
I would do it.
My box fills up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I don't have time for all that.
All right. All right, fair enough.
Because it's such a low chance, man. It's only like, it can't be over like a 5% chance. There's no way.
Just got a full inventory, doing it right now, and I'm
seriously?
Not even done. Yeah.
What kind of dirt?
It's like 1 in 4. That's what I'm guessing.
Definitely end up with usually like a full soil box of 50 plus like half an inventory of soil.
Yeah.
Really?
Gets me like a half an inventory at least of materials. So,
oh, you gotta
you know,
be kidding me.
Yeah, never it's
mind.
Worth yeah. it.
Never mind, Reed. No. I figured it out. If you're wearing your porters, they don't show up in your inventory. I was sitting there going, man, you don't get shit for this. This is terrible.
Wait. Soil? Soil does soil works with porters? I thought it was the other way.
No. But when it turns into a material, apparently it's straight to my bank.
That explains.
I was like, this sucks. We're getting anything out of this.
Well. Well,
okay.
Oh, that's really funny. But anyways, yeah, more on ancient invention and ancient summoning in 2 weeks' time after our level talk next week. Master archaeologist outfit, once again, we don't know what that's going to be because nobody has it yet. And
you can just find the if you hover over it in the store, it will tell you.
Oh, really? What store is this?
Yeah. The where you also get the with the out so there's no set effect that I don't think people know the set effect yet.
Yeah, that's what I was after.
But it gives you the bonus experience as you're used to.
Oh, okay. See, I was wondering if the set effect was there, and that's the information I wanted on that.
I thought so, but apparently I'm like the wiki doesn't know it.
Yeah,
so
the wiki doesn't
I guess
know
I'm
it,
wrong.
So it must not have been crafted yet. So we'll just leave that behind. But you can definitely
there's also a archaeologist's outfit,
which I assume is just going to be the flat XP boosting one.
Yeah,
and you know these are all going to be made within the skill, whereas previously they were on Treasure Hunter, so that is excellent. Apparently, this one is going to cost 250,000 chronotes in total, yep. 50,000 apiece. You're not going to get it the same way you did all the other ones. How do you guys feel about that?
It's a lot of chronotes, but it is better than a lot of keys.
Yeah.
Fair point. All right. Next up, the archaeology skill cape powers, which have been detailed. If I understand this correctly, the 99 skill cape allows you to activate relic powers at the bank and gives you more progress towards discovery.
No, that's the 121.
Oh, okay, sorry.
The second one.
Okay. So the first
relic power, switching out relic powers
is 99.
Is at the bank is at 99, so it's the same as magic, basically, like changing skill books, but you can change the relics as you were at the monolith, so you don't have to get there. Once you get to 120, you gain progress towards discovery after you find an artifact or something like that, I think it is.
So it's effectively... So it's almost kind of like getting... a stamina boost in mining when you drink a potion and use a stone spear.
I interpreted it as basically it takes less effort to get a discovery again. Like you get some progress towards the next bar automatically, so it is less time between discoveries.
Okay.
That's how I've interpreted it.
All right, fair enough. All right. And of course, as we're talking about, you know, the 120 archaeology skill cape, you know, there's nobody in game that has this right now, right?
Not that we know of.
But I can report that I do indeed have an archaeology 120 skill cape.
What?
Yeah.
How's that?
Whatever do you mean?
So what happened with this is that Jagex sent out a package containing some archaeology gear. And for those of you on the video version of the show, I'm showing these photos right now of what this looks like. But if you're listening on audio, head on over to update.rsbnb.com to the full
nice
show notes.
Plug.
And you'll be able to find the photos of this wonderful archaeology master skill cape. It is a full life-sized cloth version of the skill cape that you can wear. And, you know, it's actually just perfect for my height, believe it or not. I'm about 6'2", and it works just perfectly. I do even have pictures here of myself wearing it. Podcast listeners will, of course, get to see just the cape. And if you're a part of Clan Quest, you might get to see something more. So details of that will be posted to Clan Quest. But in any case, it is an amazing-looking piece of gear, this cape. The construction on it is wonderful in terms of its quality. The print of the archaeology icon itself is as high resolution as it could come. And it's just something that, you know, was sent out to a number of community creators. And I feel very fortunate to be in this group and be able to share these photos with everybody here. But this was sent out, and it's an amazing cape. And, you know, people say, hey, you don't have an archaeology skill cape yet. But lo and behold, I'm actually within the minority right now of a handful of people that do actually have this cape. So if you want to see what this looks like, just head over to update.rsbnb.com and have a look.
And you're going to wear it to Runefest this year, right? Right?
I don't think that's happening this year, given viral conditions. But we'll see. We'll see. We'll see. It's very nice. No.
Shit, this will be the year we get Runefest held in America via telecommunication.
Yeah, but you know, it's not just the cape, you guys. There's actually something else. There's something more.
There's what else? What else?
But wait,
there's more.
If you call now, we'll tell you more.
In addition to this, they also sent out a very nice handmade sculpture of the monolith. It's made of some kind of resin, I assume. Very intricate hand detailing and shading on it, and it just, you know, it just stands up on your table, and it sits there looking at you while you train archaeology. Photos of this are in the show notes as well on this, and, you know, it looks exactly like the one that is in-game, and I can't decide what's the more impressive piece of craftsmanship, this or the cape. Probably this, because it was handmade and hand-painted.
I wonder if it's made by, like...
It's probably made by the art team, the same people who were doing all those sculptures and whatnot at RuneFest.
Well, I know, like last year when I was at RuneFest, I saw a lot of people wearing skill capes, and they were all sort of like these. This is the kind of stuff that they sell on. Do you have Etsy in the US?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like this is the kind of stuff that people sell on Etsy, right?
Yeah.
Like I'm making custom skill capes. You choose the skill, we make it. I wonder if Jagger's just reached out to some of the better ones and like, hey, want to make us a couple of dozen capes that we can send out?
Yeah, and you know, I looked at this. The ones that they sell online, not archaeology related, actually have tassels on the bottom of the 120 capes, but this is just
a piece of
fabric. So this is different than the ones that are on Etsy.
Fascinating.
And it's even got a nice hook around the neck so you can strap it on and not have to worry about it falling off, too. So, very nice cape and nice monolith as well. Great craftsmanship on both of them. And, you know, I don't normally like to do this. I don't normally like to say, and there's more, but I'm going to say, and there's more yet again.
But wait, there's more.
Alongside this, inside the monolith was a USB key with a lot of concept art on it. And we're going to be showing this off over the next couple of episodes. I got a few that I'm going to run through right here. But I want to actually read out in there a letter from Maud Osborne that was sent with this package. So here we go. This is written by Maud Osborne. So he says, the first email record I have of archaeology is July 30th, 2018, exactly 20 months before archaeology will finally arrive. The email contained the results of a studio-wide submission process for a new skill. Everyone at Jagex had the opportunity to pitch their ideas, and there was a huge range of concepts, from barding to fisticuffs. Maud Timbo emailed me with six standout ideas, chosen after a lengthy session down the pub, which the ultimate burger at our local is impressive, with designers, hardcore players, developers, and even designers from old school, and Arkoff unannounced new game. The six ideas were sailing, trading, animal training, necromancy, spellcrafting, and of course, archaeology. These ideas were then presented to several thousand players in a survey, gauging excitement and expectation from just the name, a quick elevator pitch, and then a list of proposed features. The results couldn't have been more interesting. It's just a name. Archaeology grabbed no one. And I think this is me talking now. You guys, both before playing it at RuneFest and New Earth playing it this week, felt the same way. People expected something dusty and lifeless, digging basically. Instead, necromancy to a degree and sailing and spellcrafting were the early front runners. But it's when we started describing archaeology and its features that it really came into its own. The pitch emphasized how a RuneScape version of archaeology would be more fantastical instead of just digging in the dirt. The player would be navigating lost areas, overcoming puzzles, creating a team of archaeologists, and solving mysteries of the God Wars. Less Dust and more Nathan Drake. Suddenly, there was a groundswell of interest, and we knew that a twist on archaeology subverting those expectations had a real potential. It didn't win every category. Necromancy took that crown, but that's a longer story. But it was a close second. And the more we talked about it, the more excited we became. Archaeology's potential tie-ins to other skills, the notions of a gathering and manufacturing skill in one, the idea of infusing a skill with story, they all excited our designers much more than necromancy. Eventually, we made the call, and work on archaeology started in earnest in September of 2018. Fast forward 18 months, and it's the largest content update we have ever produced, as it's about to arrive. Indeed, you might be playing it now. The overriding feeling about what we've made is pride. We are more confident in the launch of the skill than we have been about anything else in the past. We've all been playing it, and we think it's full, fun, refined, and different from any other skill in game. Hopefully, you will think so too. Of course, we wouldn't have been able to deliver any of this without you. Thank you so much for your patience as we have chiseled away at the skill for so long. Thank you for your feedback at RuneFest and focus groups. Thank you in particular for showing us goodwill after the delay and being a champion of the game. You can be sure that we will be in-game on March 30th. Look out for a big huddle of J-Mods waiting at the door of the first dig site, eagerly waiting to see the first adventurers. Who knows what we will find in there. Maud Osborne and the archaeology team. And that's the letter that came with the package.
Chiseling away.
That's a tremendous letter, I think. And hearing the genesis of the skill isn't something we had heard before. So in addition to the cape, the monolith, and now hearing about the genesis of the skill, hopefully this archaeology launch is just that much more special for everyone.
Am I the only one who really wants spellcrafting now?
I knew you would.
Yeah, thanks.
Great. I knew you would.
The what they're saying here is, there's a lot to unpack in this letter, and given that this episode is probably going to run over time already, I will try and keep it brief. I think when we talked about how we find the skill is, how the core game loops works really well and how we are having fun, what that reflects is a group of game developers and game designers who also thought this game was, or this skill was fun to work on, and they really dug in. Sorry, I just keep making puns. Ooh. Accidentally. really dug into this skill, because that's, I think, like, what I hear here is that they also thought about necromancy, and they couldn't find this equally satisfying core game loop. And if you don't have that, there's just no way that you can make a good piece of content out of it. So that's what I see. That's what they have been building on. And there was another thing I was going to say. I'm just stalling right now because I completely forgot.
Yeah, and you know, this is definitely, in this perspective, a product of, you know, the way Maud Osborne works from the narrative side of things. And, you know, as we said, archaeology on its own, and as is said in the letter too, wouldn't have been that interesting. So this is confirming everything that we knew, or thought we knew.
The other thing I was going to say is that this shows that you should not leave the design decisions in the player's hands. First of all, because I don't have all the context. And second of all, it's going to be a bit counterintuitive maybe, but players don't know how to have fun.
But he didn't mention the players and all that, right?
No, but like, no.
They weren't part of the decision. Can't blame it on them.
No, but like, They did pull these skills, and they ended up not going with the skills that the players chose, right? And that might be strange, because you think, like, don't the players know what they want? But I think this shows that they don't. And that this decision was rightly made by the designers of the game rather than the players of the game.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a give and a take there. They might not need to... they might not know the direction or the next big skill or something, but players definitely know when something isn't good. Like, and they know why. But if you're saying, like, they don't know, I mean, it's like that Henry Ford thing. If I asked people what they wanted, they would have said a faster horse. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
I mean, you know, I mean, I totally get your point, but I mean, they know what they don't like. That's for sure. Just, you might not want to have them mapping out your 5-year plan.
Not even that, I am so sure. Like, a lot of people will say they don't like the nerf to Hunter, but it was the right thing for everybody to have more fun in the long term.
Yeah, still not finding that fun, but that's a discussion for another day.
But yeah, we'll have more of this concept art as we talk about the dig sites, because they relate so heavily into the lore. On that, I've just been scrolling through some of it here, but we'll provide all that in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com. So I'd just like to thank Jagex again for sending that out. It was a nice way of capping off the launch experience with archaeology for this, and hopefully our podcast listeners are going to get as much joy of hearing this story, seeing the photos, seeing the monolith, as I did on the first day of playing the skill. So, all right, let's move on.
Did you wear the cape, Shane?
Yes, I did. And there's photos of that.
All right. Okay. While you were playing the skill at launch?
There's a photo of that too.
All right.
Yes, there is. Yes, there is.
At least you did it right.
All right, let's move on to April Fool's. April Fool's Day. Let's just talk about that briefly, because we are over time.
Are we not?
Oh, right.
Doing
whoops. Oh, whoops. Sorry. I completely jumped over a bunch of things here first. Whoops, a doozy. I missed. I literally had something covering that part of the notes. I'm sorry. User experience in terms of click boxes and time sprites. I think we've talked about the time sprite issue. Yeah. Do we just want to...
We talked about the click boxes,
okay,
as well.
We can move on past that. I'm going to hand it over to you then, Sirion, before we move on to wrapping up the skill section here. Because
you're the expert
at this next part.
Yeah, there's not much to say. So one of the things that, like, I think one of the biggest critiques of some of the recent skills, specifically divination, but also dungeoneering, is that they were very isolated from the rest of the game, right? Like, divination was a lot of, like, very much when it came out, people were like, what's the point, right? Why would I do divination?
When it came out?
Yeah.
It's a joke, because I still feel...
Oh, right. Well, okay, yeah, no. Like,
anyway, moving on.
And I think they did a much better job with this skill. Like, it feels like with the dig sites that they have in the game, they could very much have made this the next dungeoneering, where each of the dig sites is sort of their own isolated experience, doesn't really interact with the rest of the world. It's almost sort of a game in its own, like dungeoneering. I think that's where the whole dungeoneering as a minigame comes from. It's not very part of the world. Like, there's now the resource dungeons, but yeah. And the way that Jagex has done this is by, first of all, making sure that there's stuff in the rest of the world that are related to this skill. So, like, they put material caches in places that make sense. They put the collectors in places that make sense, which makes it so that archaeology feels like something that exists in Gelinor rather than just something that's pasted on top of it where there were empty spots. So that's something they did pretty well, I think. I'm still hoping they're going to do more of that, like maybe some interesting integrations.
Apparently ancient potions were a thing that they could be doing later on too.
Yeah, but like not just that, but also in areas, right? Like if there's like, well, quest requirements are probably going to come up at some point for archaeology. That's going to help. Or just smaller dig sites that maybe are sort of more self-contained. But I think in general, they did a pretty good job at grounding the skill in the rest of the game. Of course, we still have to find out how it's going to work with summoning, invention, all that stuff. But
and all the other skills.
Yeah, I think there were a bunch of people who actually criticized Jagex for putting collectors in seemingly random places in the world. But I think it was a conscious decision, and that's what they actually said. Wait, like, they made a conscious decision to ground this skill, is what they said.
I don't even understand how that's a criticism. Like, there's a painting collector in the museum. There's a Zamorakian collector in, I don't know, the Black Knight Fortress. Like, it seems to make sense to me.
Yeah, exactly.
Those aren't random spots. Right, but they're not random, like, spots. Like, they have a purpose.
And it makes sense, right? It makes the whole content just more connected to the game. And I think the one thing that stood out for me is that, minor spoilers, I'll try and keep it light because this is at Everlight. But you're actually making use of that Icene. I don't know how that's pronounced. Funeral that we visited once or maybe twice during the Vampire Quest series is actually becoming part of the Everlight area and making use of that, which I felt was a really smart integration of that piece of content, making it all feel more interconnected. Yeah. So
I loved that.
Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah, and you know, this just speaks to the breadth of the skill as how far it goes across the game. And you know, this is, like we said, this is what RuneScape 3 should be, and I am very, very pleased with that. And you know, I you realize we might be, that might sound like a summary, but before we do that, there's what we are calling the one and only official RSBNB tips and tricks quick fire round trademark. So Tannis, you're up first. Away we go.
Tips and tricks?
Yeah.
Dude, I'm still learning.
Oh, okay. Sirion,
keep
go
doing
ahead.
Your core. Stay strong with your core.
Put the soil box on your action bar, because if you then use the shortcut, it doesn't interrupt your excavation.
Jesus,
so.
Oh my god. That's a good one. Okay, thank
You're
you.
You're welcome.
Earth.
Shane, do you know anything about anything?
I forgot to do that.
Oh, Lord. I got nothing.
All right. For me, it is, of course, what we said earlier, and that is focus on training this skill the way that brings you the most fun. And that might sound like a cop-out. Tannis said the core. Sirion said the archaeology box. But I think – or the soil box. But when it comes down to it, this skill – is about a circular loop and getting on and getting off wherever you most feel comfortable. So train it the way that's going to make you feel the most comfortable.
All right. I had something in my throat.
All right, fair enough. Fair enough.
Hades, that's too. Geez, that's worse than COVID. Reached all the way up here.
All right, what do we think? Sirion, you go first. You're going to be the most longest-winded here. On this.
This skill had all the right, was in the exact right position to be usually disappointed. Almost all the updates that I've been super hyped for in the last few years have been wildly disappointing. Manifos and the achievement rework specifically were very unpleasant. This one actually lived up to my expectations, which was wildly surprising. It is such a nice... I've been having so much fun. I didn't even know that playing a skill and grinding it could be fun until I played this. So, yeah, I think it's amazing. One thing that we didn't mention that I should mention is that, first of all the environments are really pretty.
Aha, you went exactly where I was going next.
But the soundtrack is absolutely gorgeous. You know, they even have a leitmotif for archaeology, which made me really happy. You know, this skill feels like a culmination of many years of lessons. It takes the best of their mining and smithing rework, invention, like all their big content releases of the last few years. They took the best bits and the lessons of that and all munched it together into this. And it shows.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm just going to pile on with that and say the exact same thing as you. And I'm just going to add on to what you said, that I haven't felt this immersed in RuneScape in a long, long, long time. And, you know, it's of course due to the mechanics and the core loop as well. But you went exactly where I was going to go with this in terms of the environment and the backing soundtrack and just the total immersion that brings forward with it. So much so that I've actually gone forward and been playing archaeology pretty much exclusively on Windows because it renders better than my Mac OS client does.
The last time I've been this immersed in RuneScape was when the Needle Skips came out.
Oh. Yeah.
That says something big, I think. We'll let Earth,
I mean,
Earth
got
you can
me
go next.
Here.
Yeah.
Still playing. Because, you know, it took me, what, a year to even look at archaeology?
You mean invention?
Or invention, yeah, yeah. Excuse me. And I still don't know what I'm doing. I mean, I probably don't know what I'm doing with invention. With archaeology, but it feels like I do. I don't feel lost. And like I said, this feels like the most complete update Jagex has ever delivered, especially on this scale. Because there's so much, but it doesn't all feel like I do this and then I'll be somewhere else.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the goal isn't to be somewhere else.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying it. Music's beautiful. I want to listen to it. I don't get tired of it. This may not just be the most complete update Jagex has ever done, but it might be the best one ever. And that is coming a long way from me literally laughing when someone mentioned
when
it
I told
because
you
I thought it was a joke. So, 5 out of 5 from me.
All right. Tanis?
You know, I'm calling this like the onion skill just because there's so many damn layers to it. I've never been more impressed or more proud of the job that they've done and what they have delivered. And this is why you need to give them time. I feel like the ship had been, like, you know, they were turning the ship around.
Yeah.
But there were start and stops,
they
right?
They needed the captain.
This and the captain is obviously there, and now the ship is pointing in the right direction, and wow, look at what it is capable of.
Yeah.
And something else that, you know what, look, whether this is true or not, and it is true sometimes, so other times it's not, but Jagex has had a reputation in the past of delivering broken stuff. Like, it's always broken
somehow. Cue the first day of invention.
Right. And I haven't heard anybody, no one's like griping or complaining. This skill isn't broken. It's polished. It's complete. It's like showroom floor quality. Like, I've never seen them do this well. I mean, seriously, like they're like the Bad News Bears, and then all of a sudden they're winning the Colt World Series. You know, it's like, how did that happen?
The worst thing they have to patch is replacing a shiny cow.
Yeah,
with a chocolate vanilla and strawberry cow. You know, if that's really the worst thing, wow.
Yeah, that's an amazing job. Like, look how far they've come. And so, like, I mean, it's a 10 out of 10 for me.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, I can't think of anything that makes it better.
I was up past midnight on Monday playing this game. That has never happened to me before with RuneScape.
Yeah. I've been going to bed at like 10 for a while. I've been up till 1 every day this week.
I've been taking like every hour of free time that I could find just to play more.
Me as well.
That is something that RuneScape has never achieved for me before.
I haven't played anything but RuneScape this week, and I haven't done anything other than archaeology.
I just started a new Knights of the Old Republic 2 playthrough.
Like, I thought you were going to say you started a new RuneScape account.
That is my favorite game of all time, and I love it, but this is more interesting to me. So,
well, there we have it, folks. I think that says all that we need to here on that in terms of summing it up. So that's really, really good on that front. I think we should hear from the captain right now on this before we move on.
Aye, sir.
Let's not us. The captain in this case is clearly Maud Warden.
Engage.
That's right. RuneScape's executive producer. He put out a post that went with archaeology, touted the triumphs of having the team now working 100% from home. It's a change they made in a matter of days. And he says 2 weeks in, they felt the breadth of these changes in a way and at a speed that no one could have anticipated. And the team is globally distributed and mostly functional, bringing you this release, archaeology, all from their homes. And he goes on to say that this is pretty surreal because he's both happy and sad, and it's weird to ponder the moral symmetry of all this. But were these better times, a message like this would be joyous and excited, so he's choosing to focus on those feelings in this posting, of course, because of the global pandemic. And he says, as a developer and leader, I make it my mission to try and put a smile on players' faces. There's no better feeling than bringing creations to life and getting them in front of you all to experience. These are artistic, creative, and technical expressions of our endeavors. Developing a new, powerful skill like this, our 28th over the last 19 years, is no small feat for us. Archaeology brings a new chapter of an epic story, intricate gameplay, and big rewards and mastery. There are 5 new massive and magnificent locations to experience, forming an incredible expansion of Gelinor's rich, mysterious, and whimsical history. I am proud of the work the team put into this release. The extra delay was well spent on polish, quality, and an exciting launch campaign to celebrate the game you all love. This also marks the beginning for how we weave lore and story into our content. We have begun a tale that sets up our content for the coming year, and many of you are already discovering and talking about some narrative Easter eggs that we have seeded. Both myself and the team thank you for your loyalty. Enjoy this time with family and friends, and hopefully we put a smile on your face with today's release. Please do tell us how we've done. And remember, dig deep, war is coming. And that's the message from Maud Warden on the release of Archaeology. And I think it's really awesome. On point. And it illustrates the leadership and that little directional nudge that we said was needed.
Well, I think we can say that without Maud Warden, there's no guarantee that that delay would have been made, that decision would have been made, or that it would have been put out. And it made all of the difference in the world. Like, just look how smooth. And I didn't even think they launched it from home. From home.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, we broke the game with a sigil slot. They just updated put a new skill in the game. from home. It's a different era. This is a new era. I mean, it's got to be.
Would you say it's
2K20 is terrible?
Would you say it's RuneScape the next generation?
I'm going.
It's definitely this is RuneScape 3, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, with that, I don't really have much else to say. I think it sums it up nicely done from, or it was a nice sum up from Mod Warden on that. So,
yeah,
and underscores exactly the success that we saw with this and why now we're just over 2 hours into this podcast and we're finishing the archaeology section. Thank you, Sirion. I realized I thought we could get it done in under two, but you were wrong. I mean, you were right. I was wrong.
Yep. Who needs to work on a Friday, right?
All right. Breaking news. There's a sixth archaeology site.
What?
Yeah, for April Fools, there was a sixth archaeology site with coleslaw.
With coleslaw?
Or Dr. E. Cole, sorry.
Oh.
It was an archaeology site at the Brassica, or the Cabbage Patch in Drainer.
Oh.
And you could get April Fools cabbage-themed rewards.
That's funny.
Yeah.
So that was
sorry, I was too busy playing archaeology to check this
you
out.
You didn't get the Ring of Rares?
No, I was too busy playing archaeology.
Or the Cabbage Slayer title?
Nerd.
Yeah, I wish I had fell one day later so we could have got Shane. Really. Well, been fun.
What do you mean? Well, oh, I see.
Oh, I'm sure we could have dug something up to would have been.
Oh yeah.
Funny.
I enjoyed the coleslaw puns. I love a good coleslaw, and I need to get Earth to make me one at some point.
It's got to be the creamy kind, though. I don't want
you're
that
from
vinegar.
The South. You do good coleslaw.
Okay. I guess I was just born with the ability to make coleslaw.
There you go. All right. So with that being said, let's move on to the patch notes right now. We're just going to run through these very quickly in terms of what's there, because you probably already noticed a bunch of these this week with the archaeology launch. But nonetheless... first and foremost, various changes have been made to the Make X interface, including reducing the size of the icons on the right-hand panel, reducing the size of the text in the value section. When selecting a different category, it'll no longer show information for an object that hasn't been selected or unlocked. And the clickable and tappable regions on the share options in the collection log. I don't know why this one is here. We'll save that one for after. Anyways, Make X interface. I like these changes to it. I think they're good. They smooth things over nicely. They also added, or rather changed the excavate option on several objects not connected to archaeology in order to reduce confusion. Similar changes have been made to quest logs and other instructions. Good. Also changes for the collection log, including a new reward section that shows the info that you what you get for completing each part of the log, which you absolutely need with archaeology. Clickable and tappable regions on the share options interface has been increased to cover the entire button. Increased the click and tap area on the favorite and option button as well. Changed the ambiance of the item background so obtained items are more identifiable. That's good. That's good. We also have 7 new bank chests on the overworld in the 5 dig site camps, the exam center, and the Archaeology Guild campus. You could tell that this is something that they weren't initially going to do with the skill launch, and I think this is tremendous that this made its way in here.
Mm-hmm.
Added 50 new bank spaces for everyone. Bank deposit map icon to all bank deposit locations, and this includes actually the carts where you can dump your archaeology materials as well. There's icons on the map for those. Tooltips to the items and the skill guide for archaeology and all the other skills. So if an item has a tooltip in your bank, you can expect to see it in the skill guide.
Well, that's great.
Yeah. When you level up, the skill guide will display all the information about each new entry when you click it. The adrenaline bar color has been updated to better aid those with color blindness. Tanis, did you notice anything on this?
I did not.
Okay. We'll have to look into that for after the fact. And, I mean, it's not like we've done any combat this week, right?
Yeah, no. It's all archaeology all the time.
The max skill, the portal attunement, is now completely independent and no longer checks against the attunements of the portals in War's Retreat. For those zero people that can access the Max Guild right now.
You can access the garden, yeah, so the portals still access, work.
But you can't access the PVM portal inside.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, you can access the skill portals, but not the other one.
Don't need it.
Only the ones you actually want, basically.
Yeah, I agree. Mouse over text for locked invention materials is now red. And mousing over the achievements now show your progress towards any meta-achievements that they're included in. And with this, there have been tooltips added to these meta-achievements that are listed under the achievement to show what's required. So, for example, the tooltip for Who's the Boss 6 achievement, listed as a requirement for the final boss achievement, will state to kill a total number of bosses X out of 5,000, which, of course, will be the tooltip in the previous patch note that I mentioned. Then just a quick few bug fixes here and there, including fixing an issue where the message that played after unlocking the 15th anniversary skilling speech bubbles pointed to the incorrect tab in the game settings. Fixed a number of graphical bugs around the new dig site entrances and the Archaeology Guild campus. Fixed an issue where the gizmo interface would not populate the potential outcomes when dragging a material out of the grid area. A bit of a UI updating issue there, and fixed an issue where the spacer wasn't showing between some of the requirements in the Make X interface. And that's all for the patch notes this week. There's a couple of known issues, like the time sprite will not spawn on the eastern amphitheater debris if it's active on the western location, and all archaeology camps and bonfires are burn logs / cook functionality, rather than, I guess, being able to actually put logs onto them. That's a bit of a weird-sounding one. I don't know what that is. You also may experience the client soft-locking while in the Stormguard Citadel on Xiaomi Black Shark mobile devices, and you are unable to add the Master Skill Cape to the Skill Cape Sand on Anachronia.
I think they have a little bit of time.
Yeah, they do.
Not much, but a little bit.
A little bit. Mm-hmm.
All right. Next up is something new. And I'm of two minds on this one. And these things are called player advocacy groups. So, of course, it comes at a point where everybody's focused on RS, which I think is good. And the player advocacy group, or PAGs, as they're called for short, are a group that's going to have and be able to form PAG, PAG champions, and charters. And here's the way it works. Developers will choose an area which could benefit from player advocacy groups. So that's the goal. They're going to find a champion, and the champion is going to be a player with real expertise in that topic. However, being a champion is more about than just knowing the game. We'll also be looking for people with great communication skills who have the trust of the RuneScape community. And these are the brave souls who will lead our PAGs and take on the responsibility of making RuneScape the best it can be. They'll then define a charter with the developers, and the champion will work together on this to form an agreement or a charter that outlines the goals, expectations, and responsibilities. And they say this all sounds quite serious, but with good reason. The champion will then be contracted as a consultant to Jagex for the duration of the PAG. The announcement, new PAGs and their charters will be revealed to the community, and the champions will begin recruiting their teams. These PAG members will be volunteers selected by the champion, and while having fewer obligations, will be vital in helping the champions and developers do their best work. It'll begin where the PAG gets to work. Note that the group membership can be altered at any time by the champion when there's appropriate justification. And retrospectives, once the PAG is complete, will work with the champion and the team to provide an account of the experience, and the results will be shared with all of you. And PAG number one is for the ninja team and is going to be led by the RS guy, a very popular streamer and PVM content producer. All right. So How do we feel about these? Let's start with you, Sirion.
Well, it feels strange to me to give a job to players that shouldn't be done by players. Like, I'm not sure if
it feels like the role of a liaison, really. But it sounds like it's going to be more.
In a way, it feels like a job that should be done by an expert of these things, right?
Yeah.
It
or
doesn't
someone
make
part
sense.
Of the, as part of the CM team.
Yeah, pretty much. That's the thing that bothers me most, I guess. You know, that they're giving this job to someone who is presumably not getting paid for it.
Well, they could be. There's an entire NDA behind it because they said they will sign a contract.
I'm not sure if they get paid for it because getting paid for it means you're suddenly in the employment of the company. It comes with all kinds of complicated legislation with visa and weird stuff. And I think that is not the hassle they're going to go to. I think there is a contract. I don't think there is a payment involved. Of course, we can only speculate.
Yeah.
But even then, they're not going to be. It's not going to be their full-time job, right? Like, it's in a way, it is abusing these people's fascination with the game to do free work for them.
And this is going to be operating over a one-month time span. This first one.
So. And this is interesting because we've talked about the game industry in the past and how, you know, a lot of the game industry is based on this concept on setting unrealistic expectations of people because people in the games industry are generally passionate about what they do, so game developers can afford it.
And
now, I don't want to say that Jagex does this on purpose, right? It's not they're going to be like, let's use this player's motivation for our own evil good.
No, I can't see that.
I don't see that either. But that is like, the motivations just can't be pure. That's like the of the player, right?
Also,
there is going to be bias.
All PEG members and the champ need to sign an NDA.
I mean, I can see that because, you know, it's industry standard, let's be honest.
Yeah.
But, you know, it leaves a bad gut feeling with me. I can't really.
Okay, so it's not just
my finger on it. But it just doesn't feel like. Yeah. Yeah. Hello.
I'm on the opposite end, and I think I got receipts. So
you suggested this
a long time ago and got laughed out of it, but that's beside the point. Because there are times when this, but think about it. It's like Sirion's thinking about this from a game designer perspective. But let me show you something from like a company perspective. They're never going to hire somebody like me, someone else that is an expert in accessibility. That makes no sense. They will never pay us to do that. But this. I might be able to get someone's ear. You might be able to make some actual changes, and you're going to use somebody that actually is living it and plays it and does it. And that's just never going to make sense business-wise to hire someone like that.
Do you think that... I mean, to give yourself as an example, like, they are talking about people with proven experience in communication, and I don't know the exact
words. Are live streamers in that bundle?
I mean,
some are.
View expertise in the topic is about more than just over the game. We're also looking for people with great communication skills and who have the trust of the RuneScape community. That is going to be someone who is a streamer or a content creator.
We know how it works out. It all ends up being streamers, but whatever. Yeah. I mean, I don't think you throw the baby out with the bathwater because of it. I mean, just because.
I mean,
I don't know.
You're saying about accessibility, and, you know, if there was an accessibility player advocacy group.
Yeah, Tanis, if there was going to be one of those, I would I would push for you to lead that one.
But I don't think it's going to be people like you, Tanis, or even like us, maybe. I think it's going to be a lot of people that, in the end, their income is reliant on being able to entertain people to playing RuneScape all day.
No, I mean, that's fair. I mean, that, yeah, we know that's probably the end result, but I don't know. I always thought if I wish there was another way. But who knows? Maybe they have a way. I wish there was a more of a democratic way of doing that. But even at that, it's always going to end up being a popularity contest. But
and I don't know if that's a good idea.
Maybe I should rephrase my original opinion.
Okay.
I don't have a bad. Well, I have already have some skepticism with the idea in itself, because I'm not a firm believer of power to the players in the first place. But, you know, getting someone to consult on certain topics in a organized good way, and that's what they're doing here, right? They're setting up a charter and they're outlining the things. That's a good start. I'm not against that. I am just very wary of how this is going to turn out, most likely. So I guess my bad gut feeling mostly stems from the fact that, I mean, I'm making assumptions about how this is going to go, and I just don't see it going well.
Yeah, I have that feeling, and the only reason I have that feeling is back in, I think, I don't know when it was, probably 2012, 2013. They hired three streamers to do community outreach. That was Mod Lee, Silent Core, and So Wrecked, I believe. There might have been another one, but two of the three got fired for abusing their power. The only one who stuck around for a reasonably long time was Mod Lee. But the point is that anytime that players are involved in these kind of situations, I'm not saying that you're going to have the same kind of thing turn out here at all. I'm just saying that there is going to be the pretense for a player to abuse that in some way or the other.
But abuse what? There's no power. You're an advocate.
I know.
You're consulting.
I know, but
you have no power whatsoever.
Bias?
Bias. All you're doing is bringing a side of something that the developer hadn't thought of. They make the decision. The player has no power in this. They are solely giving advice. So I don't know what they're going to abuse what they don't have.
All right. Earth, you have any thoughts on this?
I really don't.
Okay. Well, I think we just need to wait and see how this one shakes out, but I am on Sirion's side of being a little bit skeptical on this.
Cautious.
Cautious, skeptical, and maybe it's just in the way it's presented. I don't know. But
it just leaves it. Like I said, I just can't. Like the way Tanis presents it, it sounds like such a good thing, and I want to like it. It just leaves. Like, it's a gut feeling that it just doesn't sit right with me. That I feel that making such a big deal out of this, I'm not sure why that's necessary. Like, you should always be talking to your players and trying to find out those issues. Why are we making these complicated charters? Why are these players signing a contract? I am not entirely sure.
In the NDA.
What's happening
there?
Like,
I understand the NDA, but you know, we're going to get redacted meeting notes. In the retrospective. So, let's just wait and see how this one shakes out, I think. I think that's the way of handling this one right now. All right. Next up, Slay the Slime, a new treasure hunter promotion in the RNG experience vein. I found this one very complicated. I know, Sirion, you don't interact with it, but Tanis and Earth, please do feel free to comment on it.
I have a suggestion to improve this, though.
Don't
off
do
the
it.
Bat. No. Replace the slime with Alice. Slay Alice.
That's good. That's good. That's good.
Instant improvement.
I agree.
That sucks.
But presumably Alice has to come back after that.
Does she? Does she really?
Does she? Yeah.
So the way it works is that you can feed hearts of ice to the slime, and that will increase the chances of getting a rarer drop from it, or you can spend a key to unlock a prize and increase your slay multiplier, so you'll get more prizes out of the chest. And then finally, if you just want to grab your prizes for the day, you just click slay the slime and yada da da da, you're done. This one doesn't feel the same to me as the glass case or the gem one that you can upgrade the rarity on, or the one where you make your own treasure hunter drop table.
Yeah, no, this is the old style, I think, it feels like to me.
Yeah, and, you know, with that, I think this is probably the litmus test on the far side of, you know, how can we change treasure hunter while still maintaining a degree of blind chance to it, whereas the other ones move further away from that in varying degrees. And I think based on how this one goes, there's going to be some looking back across the various promotions to see which one works the best and, you know, if this one can come forward and, you know, where do we put this one on the spectrum and whatnot in terms of player sentiment. And then based on that, we'll see treasure hunter changes that effectively, of course, have a good player sentiment to them, but also are good on the revenue side of things as well. So I think I'm on the camp that this one's okay, but it's not as good as the other ones, and that's where I'm keen to leave that for myself. Earth, do you have anything on the Slay the Slime Treasure Hunter promo from your interactions with
it? I couldn't figure out what it meant.
Yeah, that's basically what I said. It seems more complicated than any of the past ones have been. So this runs from the 2nd to the 6th.
I think they used like 1,000 hearts of ice, which is fine.
What?
But...
Wow. Did you get anything good from it?
No.
Okay. Fair enough. Tanis, you good?
Just kept clicking, dude.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like this is kind of not the right direction. I
no.
want to see it going in the other direction.
No, I agree. All right. Simple enough. Done. All right. Moving on. We do have a listener question, which we'll get through. But before we do that, I'll just thank our Patreon supporters for this mammoth episode. This week, I'd like to thank, as it is the 1st of April, or the first episode of April, rather. This week, I'd like to thank 29 Let's Go, Brock H., Cameron, Cass, CGB900, Christian S., Diana, Jade Gizmo, James W., Jason S., Joe M., John P., Kyle, Our Memories, Rastafa, Ripeth, Sam W., The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V., Zachary K., and Zez. Thank you all of you for your support and making RSBNB Update what it is. It truly, truly means the world to us. And if you're at all interested in this, just head over to patreon.com/rsbnb, where you can subscribe for as little as $1 a month. You gain access to the entire back catalog of monthly bits, our round table, which we did last weekend, and of course the readback of movie night that was Monday a week ago, which was very fun. You can listen to our commentary and watch Star Trek 6 there. Of course, you also get Inside RSBNB Update, clips from the episodes that we'll hear in the clip show at the end of the year, which I can guarantee there's going to be a couple of them this week. So that's there. So that's at the $5 tier. But all in all, lots of fun and goodness that you can find at patreon.com/rsbnb. And right now, if you go there and you sign up, you can go and vote for our April monthly bit, which we'll be producing and getting out to you guys next week. As you can see, we've been very busy here with archaeology. And currently winning is Past Skill Launch Retrospective and Their Impacts. The other options are 4 years of NXT, since NXT came out 4 years ago this month, and a look back at the creation of Old School RuneScape, since that's 7 years old. So those are the choices that you can vote for in the poll at patreon.com/rsbnb. So thanks so much, everybody, for supporting RSBNB Update. It truly means the world to us. All right. Question from Sunset Fish. With archaeology here and a bunch of players rushing to be first, have you ever found yourself being addicted to RuneScape? Well, I can say, for me, the answer to this question is a very safe no, because I've found over time that if I was to burn myself out on RSBNB Update or RSBNB, the content of quality and production that we provide goes down. And I actually made a conscious effort this week to not burn myself out and try and play RS as a standard player for the first couple days, because there really hasn't been a skill launch where I've been able to do that since runecrafting going back, because we've had the website for all of them. So that's my answer to that question. Let's go with you next, Earth.
No.
Yeah, it's kind of...
I can't say that I have, because I burned myself out if I got to that point.
Yeah, and we kind of did have a bit of an issue with that in 2015 when you were host, yep. And we made some changes to that, and I think you've come out for the better on that now.
Yep.
So, Sirion Tanis, when do you guys want to grab this and run with it?
Yeah, I don't know. I think at different times I've been addicted to varying degrees. You know what I mean? I think we all have a mild case because we're
here.
You don't quit. You don't quit RuneScape, right? I mean, you will be back.
Hell, we even got the guy to play this week who said he wasn't playing because his membership lapsed and he'd have to pay $12 a month. But nope, he's playing again.
Right. So like, but during my max grind, I was definitely hardcore addicted.
I remember that.
Played hardcore. But not to like, not, I haven't been to that degree probably since then. But I think that's been good because I didn't really want to play much after that for a little while. And right now I feel like I'm at this great mix where there's so much variety out there that, I don't have to burn myself out on just RuneScape, and so I can, when I start to feel that, I can just play something else for a minute. Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, and I mean, as much fun as I was playing with that, I haven't played anything this week because archaeology has kept my attention like that, and I haven't like normally. I try to race, and I mean, that's what I do. Not race, but you know, like I try to keep up with everybody. Stuff like all my friends, and I really haven't done that this time. Like this time I didn't talk to anybody, just like a little message here and there, but I didn't have any like conversations for a couple of days, and just I don't know, I just did it, and it was really rewarding doing it that way. And that's not my normal way.
Yeah that's good though, that's good. Sirion,
I'm not super confident saying that I haven't never been addicted. I don't think I've ever been in a state where I had to play every single moment. But there was definitely a phase, it must have been about 2 years ago, where there was definitely this feeling that I had to log in at least once a day, use my daily keys, do my daily challenge, like... I definitely felt very, forced to do so, right? Like, I had an obligation to do that. I'm not sure if it's called, I would call it addiction, but I did come to the realization at some point. I was like, I was really just logging in every day to just tick those check boxes every day, and that's it. and on top of that, like Treasure Hunter just didn't feel like it was actually being rewarding. That's when I stopped caring about Treasure Hunter and efficiency. And ever since...
It's been a different experience, right?
It's been a different experience. And I think if you stop... Like, I don't see how I can be addicted because I play it for fun only, right? Like, I don't play it to reach a certain goal. I don't play it to reach a certain... To hit a certain... To hit a certain high or something like that, right? I just, you know, feel like playing it, so I do it. And it's definitely, dare say, habit to log in and do it. But what I do when I am logged in is very different every day and depending on what I want. So I think I've come out of it ever since. Yeah.
All right. I think that's a good answer to that question. And, you know, we got a wide perspective there on that. So thank you, Sunset Fish, for sending that one in. If anybody else wants to send questions in, you can email them to questions@rsbnb.com, leave them on Twitter @rsbnb, or visit the forums at update.rsbnb.com/ask. All right. So as
fun intermezzo fact for you that I just came off.
Okay.
In Dutch, the at is called a monkey tail.
I've heard that before.
So there you go. A little tidbit of information.
I think that's on the Coding Horror ASCII programmer's pronunciation rules sheet.
Yeah. There you go. The at is a monkey tail. We call it a monkey tail.
Oh, I was talking about Shane.
Because the A is a monkey, but also the A is an ape, which is a monkey in Dutch. And then it's like a little tail around, right? So it's a monkey tail.
This just sounds like an at sign with extra steps.
All right. Tech news this week. Zoom. We've all heard of this. With everybody working from home, everybody having an increased reliance on video conferencing, everybody has turned to Zoom, and I was told this week that I cannot in any way ever use Zoom for the podcast.
Oh, was that me?
Yeah.
I just told my wife the other day, I'm like, hey, if you're on a Zoom call, if you minimize that shit, they can see it. I'm like, you need to... She's like, oh, we use Skype. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So there's like, they're watching you on Zoom.
There is a huge, huge... privacy concern with it because, you know, there have already been 0-day vulnerabilities that have been reported. Zoom bombing, of course, refers to malicious actors taking control of people's video conferences. And to make it worse, the Zoom iOS app was sending your data directly to Facebook without your consent.
Yeah. Yeah, that's always
and
a
this,
good
that
choice.
Site has been updated. And we also need to, of course, note that Zoom has investors that are funded in part by the Chinese government. So there's that side to take into as well if you don't like supporting companies or products
who isn't, though?
Yeah, but that's the thing. This one tends to go a bit deeper than, you know, general, I guess we could say, board members on this. And, you know, I think that this is a product that many people had gone to because it was easy to use. You know, you just need a web browser or the app, and you can get going with your video calls. But it's actually turned out to be something that people need to be a little bit concerned about. You know, it's free, group chats of up to 100 people. And everybody at this point previously just used Skype on this regard. But I think if you're out there using Zoom, and this is the main reason we're doing this is tech news, you need to be aware that this is going to be a problem going forward. And you might not want to use it going forward. You might want to use Google's meeting solution, which I'm forgetting the name of, Sirion. The free one.
Is it Hangouts?
Is that what it is?
Oh, Duo. Duo?
Sorry, what was the question?
Google's free version of this that they made free during the pandemic.
It depends on the day of the week.
Oh.
It's called Tell me I'm wrong.
I know there's a phone one, which is Duo. I don't
Hangouts
think it has...
Is what we use sometimes.
There's Hangouts, yes. But I'm not sure if there's a customer version of Hangouts.
There's an apps or G Suite version of it, which they pushed out for free to everyone temporarily.
Yeah, that's the one I'm talking about then. You know, let's just be aware that this is going to be having these vulnerabilities, and they are going to fix these in time. But as we say with security, you just have to keep your shields up in relation to this and run your software updates. And, you know, Tanis, as you said, you know, people can basically see whatever's going on in your computer if you're in one of these meetings. So you really need to be careful with that, too.
Uh-huh.
But... I just wanted to drop this here as a bit of a warning to everybody out there who might be using this, even if you're just using it to communicate with loved ones at this point in time. Anything else on Zoom, Tanis, Earth, Sirion?
Zoom bombing can be pretty bad. I work at a school and I've already had to deal with 3 cases of it, and the first actual sessions of it were yesterday, so...
Yikes.
People have come in and said some pretty bad things.
Yikes.
So.
Yikes. Oh, and SpaceX has also banned their corporation from using Zoom because of these concerns.
It's probably best.
Yeah. All right. I realize that we are not the market for this, but YouTube is apparently going to be launching a product later this year called Shorts. As a response to TikTok.
It's going to fail and be gone within 6 months.
Shane, you say you're not the market for this. You're not going to make a short video of you wearing an archaeology cape, using the monolith as a microphone.
No!
Loudly singing the archaeology theme in a bathroom, in a mirror or something like that. And then go viral.
No!
Okay, Shane, you have to do this.
What?
You have to.
I am not making a YouTube short.
TikTok. Come on. No, you've got to now. You are, with an idea like that in hand.
It wasn't
you
mine. It was him.
It wasn't mine.
Yeah, but he gave it to you for free.
Usually I pay for this advice.
You
quite
come,
a lot as well.
You come visit, wear the cape, and do it.
No.
No, you have to.
I am not
and,
doing
know,
this.
Working at a 6-12 school, I have a lot of hatred for TikTok. So if I'm saying that, you're obligated.
Oh, crud. Anyways, it's going to be called Shorts. It'll live inside the existing YouTube app on Android and iOS. Rather than being standalone, they intend to do that to make it easier for people to engage with. There'll be brief videos available in a new feed, and on the creation front, these videos can use YouTube's existing catalog of licensed music as a background for this, and this will be coming later this year, and you can tell that they want to provide an alternative to TikTok on this. So
why was Fine killed?
I have
yes, that is my thing exactly. Like, it's exactly the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Vine was super popular, super fun, and it got killed, and now we get it back, except for it's in Chinese hands.
Yeah, and they also, what's that called? I don't know, but they make sure if you're, deemed ugly, you're not on there. Stuff like your shadow, you know, whatever. Like, if you're poor, if you're ugly,
really?
If you're...
Oh, on TikTok.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You didn't hear these? You didn't hear these stories, Shane?
No.
About TikTok censorship? Oh, yeah, dude. If you don't have a great looking back, if it looks dilapidated or something. Oh, yeah. Nah, dude.
God.
Yeah, for real.
Oh, yeah. I think I've heard something about this, actually.
It's a thing.
Oh, my God. All right. This is a box of worms I never wished I'd touch. So we're going to just move on right now. To our skilled monthly.
Future star. Right
no.
here.
If anybody wants to sign up for the archaeology skill of the month, just visit rsbnb.com/skotm. You can sign up at any point during the month because this is going to be a skill where we're all starting from the base at zero. So it's going to be the entire month to the end of April. Currently in the lead, we have Dennis with 433K, Thieves with 423, and Derp has 417K XP. Really has given somebody named Tim 2 a run for his money, so that's good. And I have 86K. Sirion, you have 53. Tanis, you have 52, and Earth, you have 48. Jeez, we're positions.
I don't think I logged out last night.
We are the real race at this point.
Yeah, we are the real race. We're positions 11, 12, 13, and 14.
But you know, see, the thing that's funny about this, though, is like at these XP rates, like it's all fine. No one's walked away when, because you don't really get into your real numbers until post 99.
Yeah.
Then throw on another couple weeks for us to figure out what the best training post 99 is going to be. Like, this stuff can change.
Yeah, and that's why I wanted to do it this way. Yeah. So, that is good. That is good. All right, let's run through some achievements this week.
Okay.
So, Jed Chor got 200 million ranged experience on April 1st, and then on March 31st, 82nd Airborne got 120 Herblore, and Lord Gimli got both 99 Invention and 99 Mining.
Nicely done. Next up, we have Cledio with 120 Magic on the 30th, R3PO with 99 Smithing also on the 30th, Black Nexican with 99 Runecrafting on the 29th, and iHerbla also got 120 Construction on the 29th.
So Shane thought it was funny to give me the hardest to pronounce name, so I am pleased to announce that Lanikea got 99 Fletching and 99 Firemaking on March 29. Arcane got 120 Farming on March 28. And Merovec got 99 Agility on March 28 as well.
Nicely done.
Nice. Well, then we had Poison Nova with 120 Fishing on March 27th. R3PO with 99 Farming on March 27th. And One Rib with 99 Thieving on March 26th. And Schnitz with 99 Agility on March 26th.
Nicely done, everyone. Nicely done.
I'm looking forward to seeing the first archaeologist entering this list.
Yeah, me too. Me too. All right. Pick of the week time. Tanis, what do you got?
Something that I never thought you would allow me to do, but I got the Tiger King. Are you guys bored? Have you been stuck at home? Do you want to see a train wreck? Like, do you want to see people that are, like, will make you feel better about your life?
Yes, the Tiger King. I do. Tell me more.
The Tiger King. So it's about these people that have tigers. But it's so much more than that. Because I bet you didn't know, Shane, there are hardly any regulations in the U.S. about owning a tiger.
Really?
Hardly any. No, we got tons of them. We're number one. We got more tigers in our country and people's backyards than India does in the wild. That is a fact.
What? So,
yeah, that's a fact.
This is the greatest country in the world.
And so this show revolves these like four or five different kind of people that have these little private type zoo. One lady thinks she's a conservation person, but that's to be debated. And it's the most weirdest, freakiest. Okay, Shane, let me tell you about the main character, Joe Exotic.
All right.
Joe Exotic is a good southerner from Oklahoma.
Hell yeah, brother.
Mullet. Full mullet. Wears a hat. Sings country songs, and is also married to two men, and loves guns.
Okay.
Oh yeah, brother.
Yeah. Then you have this Doc Addle guy over there in South Carolina, and he has all kinds of tigers and animals, but he also has all these women that he's in relationships with that run the little private tiger place. Right? Yeah.
Dare I ask what this is rated?
This is rated don't watch if you got kids around. wait for them to go to bed. I don't know. I mean, it's Netflix.
All right.
But it's everyone is talking about it. It's super interesting, intriguing. Like, there is a murder mystery. There is a solicitation of murder mystery.
So this is fiction.
No.
Oh.
Dude.
No, this is a documentary, Shane. This is a documentary.
All right. Dude, it's Florida.
Yes, it's Florida. If Florida was a documentary, that's...
Honestly, y'all being so shocked that this is a thing.
you really shouldn't. We're number one. But
it's the greatest country on Earth.
Yeah,
and
this is the...
Unironically.
Yeah.
All right, so that's Tiger King available on Netflix. What have we been up to on RS? I don't think I need to ask, but archaeology all around, yes? No,
all around.
So?
Oh, yes.
All around.
And a single yak track task.
Yeah, I did three yak track
tasks. I did one, but I think it was just talk to literally any NPC. I don't even know what it was. I just got it.
You should get on the yak track. It's really fun.
I'm not doing that.
All right. Well, thank you so much, everybody, for making this episode what it was. It was really great to discuss another skill. Last time we did this was 2016. I had lots of fun on this episode. And as I mentioned, we got a month worth of content to go through on this. So with that being said,
Do we not get to say what we've been doing outside of RS?
I mean, you can if you want.
Is that not allowed?
You can if you want.
Well, I mean, I work in IT at a school, so I have been very busy
getting things ready. I hope that's from home.
No, but there's no one there, so it's fine.
Okay.
Jeez, and I can get work done, because nobody's bothering. What have y'all been doing?
I'm quarantined. What can I do? No, I mean, We're not quarantined. We're shut down.
Yeah, we're.
I've taken a few walks. That's about as much as as you can do.
Yeah,
pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll take that as a cue to wrap. So, thank you everybody for joining us for this episode of ours.
Wrap?
Yeah, wrap the show. Wrap the show. No. If you guys want full show notes, that's available at update.rsbnb.com. You can also subscribe to the podcast on any number of podcast listeners out there: Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Pocket Cast, Stitcher, and of course YouTube. You can find all of this and more at update.rsbnb.com/subscribe. We'll see you guys next week for another episode of RSVNB Update. Take care, everyone.
See you.
Bye-bye. Bye.